Do you think that you witness war crimes taking place?
Probably. The ground assumption is that they are Hamas. And then if you go this way, you're bound to kill people that are not.
Now, in a rare interview, one soldier tells us about the reality he says he witnessed.
What kind of stuff would they say?
There are no uninvolved, only unarmed. This is something that I'm going to carry for the rest of my life.
Let me preface these remarks with I never, never, ever believe Israeli figures.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Thursday, April 25th, 2024. Thank you for joining me today. Definitely have a lot to get into. I wanted to make sure we shout this out right in the beginning. As I talked about yesterday, Adam's interview that will be coming out is going to be played tomorrow, 100%. I'm going to be not doing a show tomorrow, so make sure you don't miss that. It'll be playing it tomorrow, most likely earlier to midday time frame. Now, today in general, we're going to be talking about some of the follow-ups from yesterday, the mass grave conversation, a little bit more into the campus protest conversation, not because I think it's any less of a deviation, sidestep, distraction from the bigger topic than it was yesterday. And I don't mean that in the sense that there's real things happening and there's things that are worthy of discussion. But of all the stuff going on, I find it obvious that they're trying to sort of shove the conversation into, you know, just focusing on the protests and ignoring what's going on in Gaza as if that's the story. But there was a couple of important things happened around this that I think add important context and insight into the whole story and what we're seeing take place at every level. And I don't mean every individual, but every level of this conversation, from the highest level of authority down to, you know, from professors and actors, actresses. It's just crazy the kind of deliberate, willful deception that I guess is just either a combination of ignorance and willful deceit, or just wanting to lie because you think it gains you something, or thinking you're fighting for Israel using these lies. It's really wild to me to watch this play out. There's one clip in general I'm not going to jump ahead to, but we're going to talk about today that is just, it's just impossible to see what it is and what it means this person is. And I would just simply say it's a bad person. And we'll get to that in a little bit. We're also going to talk about, so it's hard to get into these topics without bringing in all of these sides. Like, you know, when we talk about the conversation of October 7th and everything else, it's hard for me to skip over the history around it, because I know that there's somebody new that might be tuning in that won't hear the important conversation of why it's an occupied territory, why that means there's more to discuss around October 7th and so on. My point in saying all of that is there's so many intricate parts of these stories we're going to get into, and we have over the last 7 months, that it's important that you guys take the time to look at the previous work, and maybe not even if you think our shows are too long. And there's plenty of other people out there talking about the important historical points around this that make a lot of this make sense. I just wanted to make that point because it's important that it's not every one of these topics is encapsulated in the one conversation. We're building off of previous information. So we're going to talk about, as I titled, Bulldozing Families. It's a story that came out from The Nation. It's difficult. It's sad. Just the fact that people are having to live through this. But what's interesting about the story is, as we'll get to, it's not the darkest thing that we're seeing in Israel. I mean, or in Gaza in particular. And I say that because you'll see the story doesn't end necessarily with, you know, what you might expect. But it's incredible to me that this has gotten to the level where it's so public and so obvious, and this stuff is not ignored, not disregarded, not challenged, just that it's accepted because X, Y, and Z, because of October 7th, because these people hate us, because these people don't like Jewish people. And it doesn't change the fact that what they're doing is openly criminal and openly just immoral. Now, what we're talking about in that topic is the deliberate destruction of homes while families are still inside, and the obvious reality of that. And in many cases, even corralling them around the area. And as we've seen in the past, shooting them as they try to flee anyway. So this seems like torture to me. But the point there is to understand that this is not a new discussion, and that why this is happening stems into a lot deeper topics about why these people may feel they're justified in doing so. They're definitely not. And this is why I played the clip to open. And again, there's the small part of it, the IDF whistleblower, which, by the way, I'll make a point about this. I'm a little bit, I just can't believe that story is not everywhere. I mean, this was British corporate media. Not to say that we should blindly trust any media. That's never the case. But the fact that I don't even see other corporate media talking about this. I mean, ultimately, that British Channel 4 in Britain, kind of, they stake their reputation on this in a way because it's an anonymous source that they have checked out, we're supposed to believe, right? That's usually how that goes. And it seems like everything behind it and all the pieces together, it seems like that's exactly what actually happened. But what's interesting is that nobody else talked about it that I can see, not even a lot of independent media, that this is an important story of an IDF whistleblower who is saying on the record everything that they've denied. I mean, not specifics, but the general reality of how it's institutional, that the government's allowing this, that other people alongside them are doing it without even asking, and no one even seems to balk at just shooting people in the back about not concerning themselves with how many civilians may be in the buildings they're bulldozing. It's shocking. But I also want to start with a note in regard to positivity here, guys, that, and I often end with this kind of stuff, but I just want us to really remember that it's, you know, every day I go through this, it's obvious to me that we're talking about some heavy stuff every single time, but it's because a lot of other people aren't. And I think it's important that we discuss these and make sure we understand, you know, as I see it, what's important, but that we're changing things. I mean, we have to see that. Like, we really must be able to stand back. And even if it immediately goes away after another story or fake false flag or whatever else happens, we are literally changing the world. And that doesn't mean that it's because of what we've been doing this whole time. I do believe that, but because of what just happened, because of Israel's belligerent actions and the follow-up and the exposure of all of what the rules-based international order that I've kind of just been using as a catch-all ultimately was behind it, people have woken up to things they've never asked about before, never even considered before. And it is easy right now to reach a lot of people with things that have previously been impossible to show anybody. So I think we just need to constantly focus on why things are so damaged right now, why it's so in your face and so seemingly overwhelming, because this is an effort to stop you from pushing, to stop you from looking, to stop you from telling your neighbor what you just saw, from stopping you from having a conversation at work about what's really going on, to stop everybody from even considering what we're talking about today, because that might make you racist. But it's not working anymore, and that's my point. And it's very clear that they're only pushing harder with the college campus conversation, which is just cartoonish right now, to make you think that there's this dark cloud of something negative, you know, the building of the Nazi threat conversation that's coming, it's about to come. And the reality is, most people in the world right now recognize the same thing, except they see Zionism, and they see the reality of what this truly is. And we're going to end with something from Naomi Klein, which is really powerful, on The Guardian today, that we need to get past Zionism. I forget the exact title she used, but the reality that this is the central problem and not the only problem. And it's not the general idea of Israel. It is not, other than, I mean that in the sense of the people, the actual foundational state of Israel is illegal based on the occupation. That's not, but the point of the two-state solution is to allow the future to go forward based on, you know, that there are families on both sides that don't have real stake on either of these things. And that's because of 75 years of allowing this to continue. My point, though, is that we have to realize that Zionism, and I was going to say not Jewish people alone, not Israelis alone, is the real central issue here. And I really believe people are beginning to see through that. So today in general, we're going to go through a lot of this stuff, a lot of the lies. Israel, on the official Twitter account, caught lying egregiously about a really disgusting story, getting called out for it, and then deleting the tweet. Because that's just what happens today, and nobody seems to care about that. Speaker Mike Johnson speaking with CNN and just casually referencing a baby killed in an oven, despite the fact that it seems that everybody everywhere knows that story's not true. Barely even pushed back on it. This is the kind of stuff that is continuing, and it's laughable, and people are beginning to see through it. So a lot of this stuff today is to kind of show you how much this is falling apart and how all of this connects with other things as well, which we'll start with one about biometrics and an interesting story that Whitney and I recently talked about. But we'll actually start today with one story that I think is just worthy of, I mean, I don't even know what the right word for this is. I think it's obvious what this really shows you. And this is the darker side of things that, you know, that's one of the reasons why I started with the point that Rick, I hope we realize that there's a lot of positive change happening and we are changing the world one conversation at a time. And I don't just mean this channel. I mean, a lot of the independent media, but it's things like this that make it hard to see that because there are still a lot of powerful people out there that are not good people. And I quite frankly, I think a lot of the power structures out there because of apathy and because of groups like Zionists and that have allowed this to happen and infiltrated governments and controlled your perception. But New York Appeals Court has overturned Harvey Weinstein's rape conviction. Like, what in what world does that? I mean, is there anybody anywhere that thought he was like, were there people protesting for the innocence of Harvey Weinstein? I don't think anybody anywhere thought this person would, because he's a disgusting person. He is a criminal. He is a rapist. He's a bad person. And this is not my opinion, guys. It's very obvious. They were making jokes about this in passing before it was even a publicly known story on TV shows. I mean, this guy is a terrible person. But now he's going to go, well, to be clear, going to go back to trial. But you know what I think is going to happen? I think this is going to slide away because we're focused elsewhere. And rightly so, there's a lot of bigger things happening. But this person should not be able to slip through the cracks and not go to prison for the terrible things he did simply because he's got powerful friends, because that's really what this is about. Caitlin Pota rightly points out, always helps to have good friends. Here he is with Obama, you know, with all sorts of different politicians. Here he is with Bill Clinton here. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Hillary Clinton. Not just because you take pictures with somebody does not mean that, you know, but that's the truth, though. He is highly connected, as we all knew. Just the same point that has been overturned. Now, this is just a small passing point, but I hope it reflects on the larger issue here, right? That we live in a world where it's not hard work always gets you what you need. You know, these platitudes that we tell ourselves, right? The reality of the world, and it's not consistent and all the time, is that nice guys finish last. It's a statement that we've said a lot over the years, and you know, people and you know, general statements. But it's actually kind of true when you realize that people in the world, the way it is right now, you don't just hard work doesn't always get you what you want. People who do the right thing don't always get rewarded for it. In fact, what we find is that sociopaths and psychopaths have worked their way into power and have literally created a world where they are benefiting from their psychopathy. And doesn't have to be that way. That's what people like us are fighting for. And I think that's what a lot of the world, because of the belligerent actions of Israel, have suddenly woken up to, but not even sure what they're seeing just yet. The reality of that and the changing of that in front of us. And it's important that we see that because this, guys, it's not one party. It's not one person. It's not one year. This has been a reality for far longer than any of us want to admit. And it just drifts forward because of the hierarchy of the two-party illusion. And the people out there, you know, I mean, I don't like to always, you know, like for let's just continue to highlight the person that I think is obvious in my opinion, someone like a Tucker Carlson, who I think does good work in some cases. But I mean, for crying out loud, guys, there's been a genocide for 7 months and he had one interview with one Catholic priest, which by the way, there were some things in there that were good, but overall it cemented a lot of falsehoods as well. And I think that is what their job is, whether they realize it or not. And the problem is, as long as we keep looking to them instead of everything at the same time, right? Look at all the question, everything, consider all possibilities. We get trapped in the two-party illusion. We fall back into these things and we elect another person in the same lie and it just continues forward. They bat it back and forth. Now we're going to make some partisan points to begin with, or I'd rather highlight the partisan problems in that same way and how they play you guys against each other. The reality I made, the point I made in the past about the transgender conversation where, you know, and I don't mean ever all Republicans or all conservatives. It's never the case. And I don't broad stroke unless it's accidental, which is during the trans conversation's highest point. What happened? They said, well, you can't let them have guns because they're crazy. Except 30 seconds ago, it was shall not be infringed, which meant everybody, right? And that was a very clear crack. Now we're seeing the same thing happen in a lot of different ways. I mean, with the campus protests, right? What happened to all the Republicans about rights and constitutional rights? Suddenly it's like, well, we don't agree with them, so usher them away with the police. Who cares? Or how about the idea we'll talk about next in regard to biometrics? Whitney and I have talked about it. Her work's been talking about it a long time. That suddenly people are now ushering in or calling for biometrics in the Great Reset conversation because immigrants, the border, And it's impossible that they can't recognize that overlap. Or how about just recognizing the Israel support from conservatives, where 30 seconds ago, Israel was like the biggest obvious central part in the vaccination campaigns and the Great Reset discussion. And now suddenly we just ignore all that because they're fighting for democracy. And I mean, it's just, it's incredible what people will ignore. Now, I think those people are dishonest. I don't think that they're just being swayed by talking points, but it's the people that they manipulate around them that allow us to get trapped in this back and forth hamster wheel. Now, I also wanted to make sure we saw, by the way, that another great clip was put, we just put out on the C-Lab Substack, entitled "Very Rare Brain Biopsy in COVID-19 Vaccinated Patient, A Case of Suspected Malignant Lymphoma." Another highlight from Taylor Hudak's amazing interview with Arna Burkhart, which just recently was the 1 year anniversary of that. Now, we ended up putting this out a while after it was actually done for multiple reasons, one of which was that there was a lot going on that was going to pull away from it. And this was a very important interview. And as I said, when we tweeted about this, I'm proud of everything we do at The Last American Vagabond, everything. But there's few things that I'm more proud of than this. More proud of Taylor and all the work that she did, which she, by the way, as I've said before, deserves every ounce of credit for this. She did all of this on her own in regard to the work on the ground, right? And just nailed this thing over a long period of time. Now, we put a lot of resources and a lot of time into this. And I'm proud of what this is, even though it gets suppressed and ignored by a lot. Like, this is the kind of thing that should be world-renowned news. This is a, you know, he's now passed away, and we've talked about that in the past. It's a very powerful interview by what leading was a leading expert on this. And it is science. This is using his own research, his own actual case studies to prove this stuff with actual bias. Like, this is the kind of thing that should be everywhere. Now, how much, I mean, the same point as always, you put it in the right person's hands and it gets cast around, it would be everywhere, which is always what we highlight. It shouldn't be about who talks about it. It should be about the merit behind it. Now, let's talk about the idea of that two-party illusion and why those things aren't the way we, the world that we live in, and it should be. She says, during COVID, the left, in quotes, because it's, you know, it's a very nebulous concept, supported authoritarian tactics against lockdown mandate protesters. It did. We all saw it. Of course, there was the obvious overlap in the Black Lives Matter, ignoring the fact that, you know, there's all, it's always like that because these people at the top, including the mainstream alternative media top, they don't really care, in my opinion, about a lot of the things. It's about using them for their own benefit. And so, you know, it's, oh, well, we want this because of that. But then suddenly, well, Black Lives Matter, we ignore that one. You know, that's how it's always worked, both sides. But she then writes, now the right, in quotes, is supporting the same tactics, which I don't even know how that's possible. It's happening, though, for protesters of a U.S.-backed foreign war. The neoliberals and the neocons are about to make a big comeback, and the results will be dire. She says you either support constitutional rights, and you could say the same thing about free speech in particular, which is a constitutional right. The point is that you either support them or you don't. It's not in the middle somewhere. You either support constitutional rights for everybody or you don't. But both parties are chewing them up and spitting them out. Doesn't matter what side you, the divide you are on. It's about continuing to put this back and forth until suddenly we find ourselves with nothing. Now, that's being respected because we have to realize the Constitution and the rights outlined within are God-given inherent rights, whether or not they ever wrote that piece of paper. That's what they've said. That's what the reality is. These are not things given to you by the government. They can't be taken away by the government. The reality, though, is that they're using the two-party illusion, as we've always highlighted, to slowly chip it away. And so we end up in a position where now you have people that were pointing out this problem, ignoring it and actually promoting it because of whatever the current thing is. Yeah, that applies to the Republicans too. Now, Whitney and I had this conversation. Here's the actual interview. I'll bring it up. Oh, I remember I have it down here. That's right. Right here. Whitney Webb interview, manufacturing bipartisan consent for biometric surveillance. It's an important interview. And here's that clip, by the way, that we discussed in regard to tokenization, basically turning the environment into a way to, I mean, it's a tokenization of everything. Like he says, we're starting to think about putting prices on water, trees, biodiversity, and using this to sort of like gamble with this and or arguably take control over assets around the world that aren't theirs to control. This is exactly what they're doing now. They're just now using this new age concept with carbon and manipulation therein. The point is that all of this is being driven in a very dangerous direction. And you got people that have classically been against this who are suddenly leaning into it because of current narratives. Now, here's an interesting example of this. Now, this is apparently, I'm not very familiar with their work, Alina Habba. Pretty big, 218,000 followers. pushing for digital ID, for biometric scans. Why? Because all those immigrants coming from the border. I mean, how can you not stand back and go, hold on a second? Isn't that exactly what we were all freaked out about regard to COVID-19 and the biometric great reset, and, you know, at least in one part? Or even if not, can we not see the dangers of going in that direction? I mean, I would like to hope we can, especially people that are generally talking about freedoms and invasive surveillance, right? Here's what she had to say.
I always say, why can't we have clear ID for voting? Like, I go to the airport, I have clear ID. I go in there, they scan my eyes. Yeah. I got one ticket. I vote. That's it. No one's screwing with it. The machines aren't shut down.
Isn't that machine racist, though?
Like, I was just going to say, make you feel Alina, like you're talking about IDs. I don't know if you've been keeping up
with
the news.
It's a little offensive, no?
It's racist because apparently the left thinks black people in Georgia don't know how to get.
It's just ridiculous. That's where the story goes, right? Let's divide it further between those crazy lefty, crazy liberals, right? I mean, that's how this works. Instead of recognizing what actually just got said right there.
I vote. That's it. No one's screwing with it.
Oh, really? So there's no way somebody could screw with a digital process? Really? Where are we right now? What world are we in? You know what can't actually be screwed? Well, I shouldn't. There's nothing that is out of the possibility of being manipulated, right? Anything can be. But as Pasta, a friend of the show, has often talked about and we agree with, the idea of paper ballots and actual person-to-person location voting, I mean, the reason that we're in the position we're in is because of these machines, because of the things that have been built around a simple process that have made it monumentally more complicated by design. And every step we take into the digital realm is it's easier to manipulate. It's just crazy to me. And so the idea is, first of all, why in the world do you think it's acceptable to be scanning your eyes for flying? This is the kind of thing that people are just passively allowing. It's wildly invasive. And I don't, again, I've said this many times, I don't think we even fully understand what that means 40, 50 years from now. What does that mean? What is that going to be able to accomplish? Like when we talk about the digital twin conversation or your biometrics in general, what happens if down the line there's something those things become, which I believe is going to happen with where they're pushing, far, far, far more relevant and valuable for many reasons, again, that we can't even comprehend right now. But they're sure as hell collecting it all as fast as they can. But sure, for a little bit more convenience, a faster part of the line, a little bit quicker, like, or the idea that you can just pretend that means you can't be manipulated. You know, I mean, it's wild to me.
The machines aren't shut down.
Isn't that machine racist, though?
Right, just cut it off, right? No, these are easily manipulated, easily, because it's digital, because you can hack these things, because you can lie, or because the government just doesn't care and lies about whatever they're doing. Right? I mean, however you want to look at it, why you would trust that process. But Clear ID is a physical identity and access management system that uses a single identity to synchronize access information for multiple independent sites. Man, so basically, you have like a one-stop choke point using biometrics. And that's the TSA. And I don't know. I don't even know why we pretend the TSA is, you know, we know the TSA is not something we should be supporting. I mean, James Corbett has broken that down 15,000 times, but it's just another way to justify these same steps. Here is another example. Now, this is the same point coming off of this. And here is Jesse Matchy is the one that shared this over here as well. Here's what he said when he shared it on his own account. Well, first, let's look at, so this is Ashley St. Clair. Heard the name, but I'm not very familiar. Pretty big account, 897,000 followers. Illegal immigrants are abusing food delivery apps such as Uber Eats and DoorDash. I mean, what's crazy about these conversations, like, I don't think anybody's under the mindset there's no illegal immigrants here. But let's realize, and I've pointed this out in every single conversation we've had about this, that a lot of these Republicans using this for a very clear agenda conflate immigrants with illegal immigrants, which is just disgusting when you really understand it, especially when you realize that a lot of these people are here because of your belligerent, war-focused foreign policy that you support in many ways. I don't mean her, I mean the government, but I mean her supporting it. The bottom line is that, I'm not even saying that's what she's doing in this moment. I don't know, because she just simply says something with nothing to back it up. I don't see any source material. So my point is that you can clearly see that anybody coming to the border during that hype was being called, they were all called illegals. They were calling people illegals before they even crossed the border. How does that make sense? How do you know what they're going to do? How do you know they're not going to go through the normal process? It's because it was a propaganda agenda, especially once we're hey, what happened to that? Are we overrun? Is the world destroyed? Well, nothing changed. We didn't even do anything different. We just started looking somewhere else. That's how this stuff works. Now, there's still people coming to the border. There's still the same problem that is a real problem, which is the manipulation politically of the border, the lack of control or security there, or any other number of things that we've talked about, including finding a Mossad-connected person coming through the border, which all of the right pretended was somebody else. And then when it got exposed as a Mossad agent or connected some Mossad agent adjacent, somebody who was recruiting for Mossad is what the story was, they all just stopped talking about it. So suddenly it doesn't matter that you've got somebody crossing the border illegal as long as they work for Mossad? Apparently so. I digress. The point is, illegal immigrants are abusing food delivery apps. I guess we'll take her word for that, but so is probably anybody. It says these undocumented folks are paying delivery account holders a fee to use their credentials, meaning you plus these companies have no idea who is coming to your home. I mean, so are you pretending that you know the random person who shows up other than an illegal immigrant? I think this is really highlighting the fact that they have a problem with somebody who doesn't look like them. That's my personal opinion. I mean, you don't know the delivery person, no matter what person it comes to the door. Why does it make a difference if somebody uses a different app? I guess the argument would be that they are not accountable to the delivery company. But again, I don't even know if I can verify this stuff. But it says, this is an insane safety risk, especially for women. These companies should be taking immediate action to implement safeguards such as ID, biometric verification before each delivery. Are you serious? So now you're shoehorning in biometric verification for Uber Eats? I mean, guys, this is comically stupid. Like, there's 1,000 other ways that you could verify somebody's identity the way we do today. This is, I don't know whether this is something that's meant to be manipulative or that they don't recognize that they're being played. This is crazy to me. All of a sudden, people that, just like I said, pointing out the problems 30 seconds ago in a different context are now pushing for it, just like Whitney said, because it overlaps with a wedge issue that they're passionate about. Here is what he said in regard to this. Is it better flavored coming from semi-attractive, conservative-posing women, blue-haired leftist, or WEF globalists? Right? Great point. Seeing as how they're all pushing for the same thing, we can't connect those dots. It says, quote, these companies should be taking immediate action to implement safeguards, such as the same point that what they just read down there. He said, is this MAGA? Now, again, I don't even think the MAGA term, it doesn't apply. There's a lot of people that believe in Trump and believe in the Make America Great Again concept, but there's even within that group, multifaceted opinions. The truth. I know people within this group that very clearly do not agree with some other things or don't think QAnon is real or don't think, you know, and there's all sorts of different levels of this. It always gets lumped together because it's a way of dehumanization and everything else we've talked about. But Jurassic Carl nailed it here. It's almost as if the uncontrolled immigration was meant to, among other things, create a demand for digital ID. Oh my God, shocking. It's exactly the point. And he goes, oh, looky, looky, more amped up security in everyone. Another example. This is from March 28th. It's simply talking about, guess what? We have guns around New York, so we're going to now do body scans. Now, you could argue that may stop a gun here and there, but I highly doubt that that's actually about guns. What do you think?
Proud to announce that we are taking the next step forward in our ongoing efforts to make our subways even safer and ensure New Yorkers feel safer in the transit system. Today, in accordance with the POST Act, for the use of technology by the NYPD, we'll be publishing the impact and use policy for electromagnetic weapons detection systems here in New York City. This kicks off the 90-day waiting period.
To be clear, he's talking about using electromagnetic detection to find weapons, not necessarily looking for electromagnetic weapons, just to be clear on that.
Before this type of technology can be tested and used in our city to help keep New Yorkers safe. This is a rule that we have to follow. We have to wait 90 days before we can implement this technology. But during the 90-day period, waiting period, the NYPD will work to identify all vendors with effective technology and expertise.
Oops, I just closed one on accident. But so, I mean, what we're talking about is body scans and biometrics. So first of all, just like with the TSA, that's not safe. Just because they argue one here, one there, it's not going to kill you. It's just like going to the dentist and doing the x-rays. Those things are bad for you. They're really bad for you. My mother used to manage a dental office for her entire career. I mean, and they know well these things are very bad for you. That's why they put that gigantic thing. I know, I think actually things have changed. I forget where they've changed to today, but that's the reality was they knew that. So these things are not going to be safe for you. I think that's the obvious reality. Hold on, I think I closed too many. Here we go. So if we're talking about body scanners meant to detect firearms, where does that progress? What happens next? Is it going to be iris scans, facial scans, which, by the way, most of those are already happening without you even knowing that. On top of that, that does have a negative effect on you. And I think one that's just setting up the general infrastructure. Sure, call me a conspiracy theorist, plenty do. It simply means that we're willing to consider unpopular possibilities, or rather, possibilities that the government want you to think are unpopular. Really obvious. Here is what Just Following said. All I took from this, and this is her speaking, is that they're going to get conservatives on board with biometric digital ID by incorporating it into voter ID. Aha. And so you could talk about immigration. You could talk about voter ID. All these things are issues that they're using to manipulate you without realizing, which I don't, again, know how it's possible, realizing that it's just the same topic. So I'll conclude this interview. I really recommend you go back and listen to this again. Manufacturing bipartisan consent for biometric surveillance. As always, her work gigantically ahead of the curve, and the reality being that this is what's already going on. Now, I wanted to highlight this again before we, and there's one point that I'm going to include that ties back into that, using artificial intelligence to deep fake to lie for Israel. Let's just remember that. It connects back with the same thing Whitney's talking about. But first, I just wanted to make sure I highlight this again. I'll include this. This was the 8-minute clip that I broke down. The full link is here. It's only like 12 or 13 minutes, but I essentially just cut out the parts where the interviewer was sort of like adding different points. I just wanted to cut to the chase on what he was saying, what the IDF whistleblower was saying. Israeli soldier speaks out on war in Gaza, admits institutional war crimes are being committed. And as I said, this is not a bad apple problem. This is an institutional problem. This is Zionism. This is the allowance of this. At the very least, willful ignorance that it's going on while driving it to happen. And this is exactly what he talks about. If you have not listened to this, this is important. It is scathing. And again, this is from Channel 4, British media. And yet, I don't see this anywhere. I just find that shocking. Now, make sure you watch that. Here's the show that we discussed. IDF whistleblower admits institutional war crimes are being committed openly. I play that to open as well, but I wanted to show you one thing. I just want to make sure you didn't miss that in case you didn't see the last show, because it's incredible how damning this is. And the reality of what he is laying out is everything they're saying didn't happen. I also want to point out how hilarious it is that guess what happened on Facebook? You know, what's Facebook? Does anybody use Facebook anymore? The point is that they just deleted this. A story about a whistleblower on the record with corporate British media. But it's fake news. Why? Because Israel. Right? That's just apparently so. And guess what? They did the same thing they seem to do with us all the time. Just like before, all we got was misinformation, even in times we were just literally citing provable information from scientific studies. It says, it looks like you shared or sent symbols. What? Praise or supported people and organizations we define as dangerous. So are you suggesting that British Channel 4 is a dangerous, illegal terrorist organization? Or do you just not care and you just lump this statement over everything that I do? You know, it's obvious. But it goes against our community standards. And it says even more specifically, here's examples of what we don't allow. Praising a terrorist attack. I didn't do that. Supporting violence against a particular group of people. Didn't do that either. Supporting or promoting harmful criminal activity. No, didn't do that at all. In fact, what you're doing is hiding by censoring this, the criminal activity. You are supporting violence by hiding this content. You're praising terrorist attacks in an abstract way by allowing this to continue. Not me, not in any way possible. They would like to say that I am, right? By simply highlighting the actual legal reality of all these things, they say I'm praising something. Or by saying free Palestine, they say you hate Jews. That's the world that these people want you to live in, where nothing means anything, everything means nothing. They'll tell you what it means. That's how it works. Lastly, I thought it was hilarious to overlap this with the AI conversation, artificial intelligence. How we made this decision, Facebook. And it says, our technology found your content doesn't follow our life. So AI did. Which is what we know already. It's automated. They don't care. It's just getting rid of the things they don't like anymore. And we can see that Israel's government is aggressively influencing this around the world. The Zionist government has influenced and infiltrated cabinets all around the world. An interview I had with David Icke discusses the history around that. Right here. And this is important. It's Sabbateanism. It's the one of the historical parts of the Zion, or really more than just Zionism. Arguably, some of the historians around this or people talking about this academically have argued. Someone's saying this. Oh, sorry, guys. Had the screen on the video. So here, this, all I was showing you was these, by the way. I'll just take a quick second to show you for the non-podcast viewers. This is the censored from Facebook, simply saying we removed it. This is the one saying that it was because we apparently shared things or said things we didn't do. And then this was the one that is praising a terrorist attack. And then AI. Just so you saw what I was talking about. So back to the point was, the historical background. So Sabbateanism is an interesting conversation, as he called it, the Sabbatean cult. As I was saying, academically, people have discussed this, arguing that this is sort of the foundational aspect of all three, communism, Zionism, and Nazism, which is really interesting to consider. But the reality of the statement here and the argument is that Zionist and Sabbateanism behind it have infiltrated historically, or rather his point is specifically that Sabbateanism is known. That's the historical reality of what they were trying to accomplish, infiltrating political and religious organizations. And now we see Zionism doing the same thing with Judaism and everything else. That's important. So on this point, I find this really interesting. Now, the next three segments we're going to talk about right now are lies. Obvious, provable, repugnant lies. Like openly doing so, knowing that you're only, like, again, you could try to argue that they're somehow knowingly deceiving you because they think it's in the interest of a greater good. But no way should you give anybody that benefit of the doubt. And even if you do, they're still liars. They're still lying to you about what's happening, and in a very clear way, allowing genocide to continue. But Ford Fisher highlights this. A high school athletic director has been arrested after he allegedly used an AI to generate a realistic deepfake audio in an attempt to frame the principal for making anti-Semitic and racist comments. Well, what do you know? It's not like we've ever heard that before. See, this is so frustrating to me. And I am following him. Twitter's just so wonky. So here's what it says. An ex-athletic director accused of framing principal with AI arrested at airport with gun, which is sort of an interesting overlap to it. Like, that's sort of an unrelated part of this. But it says Baltimore County police arrested Pikesville High School's former athletic director, now former, Thursday morning and charged him with using artificial intelligence to impersonate the principal, Eric Eiswirt, leading the public, and this is where I think it's important, to believe Eiswirt made racist and anti-Semitic comments behind closed doors, which he's had there, and there are still ongoing repercussions for that, even though it's turned out that he was lied about. Why? Because the students at the school who want to believe it still pretend that he said those things. Now, it says Dazhan Darian, who is the name of the former athletic director, 31 years old, was apprehended as he attempted to board a flight in Houston. Apparently, he had a gun. Interesting overlap. Darian was charged with disrupting school activities after investigators determined that he faked Eiswirt's voice. So I wonder why this is still accused of. And it's odd the way that they're framing this. Because apparently the investigation found that he lied and he faked this thing. He circulated the audio on social media. He wanted this clearly to be go around, you know, and this is the kind of argument we're making. Now, you don't have to make this about necessarily connected with Israel and promoting of Zionism, but it's the same kind of general point we're making elsewhere. He's using this concept to benefit himself. And I think that's a huge part of this right now. And there's going to be a clip we'll get to in a minute showing you a pretty famous person doing that. Blatantly pretending like somebody is being threatening or hating them because they're Jewish, and it has to do with it in Uber. It's very interesting. But it goes on to say it not only led to Eiswirt's temporary removal. So he for a moment got fired for lies from the school, but also triggered a wave of hate-filled messages on social media, numerous calls to the school, which, by the way, those are people framing it as he's a racist, he's an anti-Semite, he makes me feel unsafe. And the hate-filled messages about him get, you know, turned away because, well, they're just upset. Or it's all a coordinated lie about making him look anti-Semitic, and that gets rationalized, and all the hate from one side of this becomes irrational, unnecessary. But what happens if he never gets caught? What happens if this guy never gets the reality never comes to light? Well, this person would be an anti-Semite forever. He'd probably never get his job back. and even worse things could happen. Do we not realize that that's going on today? I'm not, I have no way suggesting that there is no anti-Semitism or there's no racism or there's not people that are genuinely being disgusting. I've always made that clear, and only a child would pretend that there's no such thing in the world. The question is to what degree? And I think it's obvious if you have to manufacture all these lies that it's pretty clearly just about the same it is anywhere else for any other group. There are people that hate Jews. There are people that hate black people. There are people that hate white people. Clearly. The point is that it's not some insurmountable, all the world around, only safe in Israel kind of a situation. In fact, as we've come to realize, anybody that has a brain today can realize that they are far more unsafe in Israel because of the state of Israel, because of Zionism. But it goes on to say, police say Darian made the recording in retaliation. And here's the interesting overlap, because Eiswirt, the principal, initiated an investigation into improper payments he made to school athletics coach, who just so happened to also be his roommate. And Darian is also charged with theft and retaliating against a witness. Great guy, right? I shouldn't even say that, because who knows? They could all be trumped up charges. My point is that it seems to be an effort to go after somebody using the identity, using the race baiting conversation, because he didn't like what he did to you. And it seems to be because you did something wrong. That's not a good person, if that's the case. And it says Eiswirt's voice, which police and AI experts believe was simulated, which, by the way, again, there it says their investigation found that he lied about it, that he faked this, and it was AI. So I just don't, it's strange that the way these articles today, when you have a certainty and the investigation finds something and there's nobody else going, no, that's not true, here's my side of it, then they found the truth and this is what's happening, or at least that's the report. Here's what they found. The investigators found they lied. This was AI. But they say police and AI experts believe it was simulated. It's a weird way to frame it, isn't it? It's just funny how there's certainty. So if Israel says this is what happened, they come out and say this is what happened in Gaza. If it's the other side of it, they go, well, you know, experts believe, you know, it's the same kind of a thing. But it says made disparaging comments toward black students and the surrounding Jewish community. And it was widely circulated on social media. Many current and former students believed he made those statements. And my point is, I guarantee there are people that still argue that he made all this up and he's still saying that. That's already part of the conversation. Very interesting to me. Now, overall, I think what this highlights is simply an effort to use the concept. And what, oh, I think there was one other part in here that I thought there was another, basically just another part about the Jewish community, or the you know, it says, yeah, right here. I know I highlighted that. It says, and if I have to get one more complaint, this is what the guy said. He said, or rather used AI to fake him saying, if I have to get one more complaint from one more Jew in the community, I'm going to join the other side. Now, why would you make that statement? Like, wait, because it's because you know this is a hot button issue, because you know that you're trying to frame this as the secret anti-Semitism that's behind everything. And they lied about it. This doesn't mean it's not there. But we know, again, my opinion, I think is obvious that there's not some insurmountable, overwhelming hatred for Jewish people in this country. I don't think that exists. I think it's far less than almost anything else, quite frankly, but it does exist. I see them every day. I see them in the chat. People end up coming, jumping in. But for all I know, that could be a Zionist liar for all we know, but coming in and making the statement that this is all because of the Jews, which I disagree with. I mean, I think that's an obvious, objective, self-evident reality that you just are, you know, people that are this baby that was born and is a Jew, is, you know, a Jewish family. Is he immediately a bad person? Well, no, that's a stupid thing to say. It's about the ideology. It's about the Zionism pushing it, in my opinion. But here's another example of how the government, the Zionist state of Israel, is. I mean, what this really shows you is not just an oopsie lie or an accident where we thought the story was real. It's showing you a willful deceit. Two things: posting something that either they didn't even care to check or didn't care whether it was real or not, because it was just about using another thing to push narratives. That's what I think it is. Same with the state of the U.S. government, the Israeli government, any government, which is ultimately that they don't really care about truth, falsehoods, truth. They just care about achieving their ends. And if they think they can get away with it, they'll get away with it. In this case, Israel posted something they've now deleted. And that's the important part as well. Suppressed News, shout out to Suppressed News for highlighting this and getting back and forth with me about the image. I was actually able to find the archive after the image, but Suppressed News is the one that called this out. I saw it first. He said Israel lied again. I'll play this video for you, but first, they deleted it. It's gone. Here is the actual tweet of the image, which again is deleted, and I'll show you the archive as well. Here's what they said. This is the official State of Israel Twitter account, guys. It says they murdered the children's mother in front of their eyes. This is all a lie. Grabbed her corpse, hit it under the bed. I believe they meant hid under the bed, and planted explosives around it. There's many parts of this that have already been debunked in regard to what actually happened, coming from Haaretz and other stories. It says one of the Hamas terrorists then grabbed the orphan children and took a staged photo. But you might remember that photo if you watch the show or you're informed at all, because this was a very public conversation. So how do they think people aren't going to highlight this? Do you remember what this was? Do you remember the story when this came out, which they said, oh my God, Hamas has stolen all the children? Well, our point was, well, hold on. Didn't you just get done freaking out about the fact that they went after killing every child they could? And then they show you a video with children for the purpose of debunking that story. And all you do is jump to the next narrative, which is, how dare they have the children? Well, that to me, I agree. They shouldn't have taken children. That's a war crime. Let's be clear about that. Any child that was taken is a crime. That's period. Like, we have to be clear about those lines. You could argue we should state the obvious reality of October 7th and the reality that an occupied territory, being all of Palestine or just Gaza and West Bank, if you still think that's the only part, which is wrong, has the legal right to armed resistance. That's the Fort Geneva Convention. That's why Sam Husseini has been really ringing that bell. So that means that as acted with violence against their occupier, military targets, that was all legally protected under international law. Any crime committed around it, shooting a civilian, stealing, kidnapping a child, is a crime and should be called out for it. That's the honest stance that we should be taking here, especially since we realize on top of that Israel has funded Hamas up to the tune of billions of dollars, as plenty of people that are part of the community, the former Israeli politicians, have made clear. I'll just play the first part of this.
So are you saying Benjamin Netanyahu deliberately boosted Hamas to try to prevent a Palestinian state?
Yeah, sure. He deliberately and systematically even told, is on record, whoever wants to avoid the threat of a two-state solution has to support my policy of paying protection money to the Hamas.
So former prime minister. And he's telling you that they paid them. And the next guy was going to tell you the same thing we played before. $1.4 billion in cash. Not for humanitarian aid. There's no aid to buy in that. That's why it comes shipped in. The point is, this is for weapons. So my point in saying that is that if we're realizing that there's plenty of things that were wrong that were done, we have to realize that there's a nuanced situation here. And we have to realize on top of that, there's been countless stories about Mossad agents undercover in these positions. That doesn't have to mean we know that just as likely Hamas did all of this, or individuals within it. But that doesn't change the legal reality of October 7th, and that's important. So my point is, you remember this clip, and yet they nonetheless had the nerve, or whoever was stupid enough to put this out, it says, this is what globalizing the Intifada looks like. And we'll get to the Intifada. Actually, let me grab that really quickly. I had it somewhere over here. We'll come back to, oh, there it is. This is more, I guess it's more relevant here right now. You know, my point about all this is that this is the kind of not the lies that we get. Aviva Klumpas, one of the classic propagandists about the Zionist manipulators right now, she goes, but tell me more about how these are, quote, peaceful protests. All the signs say is Intifada until victory. This one says fight for worldwide Intifada. All they're doing, as I said, is you just are misrepresenting what the word means or being too ignorant to care, as usual. I've said this countless times. Now, yes, somebody can say the word revolution, by the way, and mean murdering everybody in their mind, but that doesn't mean that's the definition of the word. It's just like Intifada. If you read about it, not the context through what the current people, like what the definitions changed on current Wikipedia pages mean, the same thing they did during COVID-19, but the actual meaning of the word, which again, doesn't mean there's people out there that might say it thinking bad things, but it means to shake off or to get rid of or tremor or shivering. There's different context to it, but in this context today, it means revolution, or if you prefer, armed resistance. And I've said this many times, which I guarantee irritates people out there that don't want to connect these things. You could literally call the American Revolution the American Intifada. Absolutely. Because that's what it is. It is a revolution. It is a resistance. It is a shaking off of your government yoke. That's what we're talking about. And so all she can do is go, they're dangerous because we don't like the reality of what the truth behind that word actually means, which is you're resisting against your occupier. So when they say that, all they're trying to do is make that into a bad thing. Now, to the point, the video itself was not a still shot. It was not a single screen grab after they took the children, after they murdered her mother. No, they lied, and we'll prove it, because this was in a separate location, away from this, after October 7th, where they had the children as hostages, which was a crime. And they deleted this tweet for that reason, because they got caught. But here's, again, the archive. So you have the proof this is, in fact, Israel from today, and that they haven't now deleted it. So let's play the videos. Here's the full one, by the way. Let's play the shorter one first. And this is what they said. Look at the mercy in our hearts. Here's the children. We didn't kill them like you do, because that was the whole point of the video. They were trying to go, look, we didn't kill them like you keep saying. And as I said then, you could argue they lied and just were showing you a couple while they killed the rest, which it's continually clear they did not. And just like the video I showed you yesterday, where I think it was Herzog was sharing it and going, look at how dangerous they are. But then Jonas added the actual translation. And what were they saying? Stop, guys. You're not allowed to hurt this person. He's a hostage. He's protected. It's forbidden. Yeah, I mean, it's everything contradicts what they're claiming. It shows you the real racism behind what they're doing. But he says, here, drink. And he, and just as him says, say the name of God, like just, you know, things that probably irritate people that are watching this. The point is, they're treating them kindly, at least in this video. And it says, here's how they treat Palestinian children.
This is one of the targets. This is a child.
You've seen all these. Many of these have been broken down.
That's one of the speakers.
Here is the full of the first part, right? And this is the, it was only short video as well, but Suppressed News as well shared this today. Footage from October 7th shows how Hamas treated the children. Israel will always lie about it. Now, I actually don't believe that's from October 7th, but in any case, because this, remember, if the timing is, if I'm remembering correctly, this came out after the fact, right? And this is with the, around the time when people are being released. It was like the earlier conversation, and they came out with this showing that they didn't hurt the children. But here's the full clip. Now, of course, you can say that that's all lies, right? That they just manufactured this to make it look like, and that's, you should certainly consider that. But what does the rest of the evidence show us? The consistency of the other hostages who've come back and also said they were treated kindly, on and on and on, other than when they sit at home for 2 months and then weirdly change their story. You know, it's interesting, isn't it? Truth is, Israel knew they were lying. There's no way around it. They put this up because it was a manufactured effort to try to convince you that these people are dangerous. And I think they're dangerous too because of obvious overlaps with Israel funding and what they've obviously been responsible for that is clearly tied to the push because of divide and conquer to create the situation which would never allow the two-state solution. But we have to realize that since 2006 forward, there has been a lot that has changed. We're watching that play out. I always highlight that there's a nuance there. I don't trust the entire group is some sort of altruistic entity that only wants resistance. I don't think that's the case because you can see infiltration. At the very least, you could argue that there might be assets from Israel in these groups. So you just can't broad stroke any of this. But nonetheless, they know that they made this up. They know they took a screenshot of a video that they already talked about and made up an entire story about it and then deleted it. I mean, it's just such a core and obvious point. No one's come back around and said, oops, we lied about that, or oops, we got that wrong, because it's obvious they knew. It's obvious the image, or at the very least, it's obvious that they didn't even check. And this is what I keep showing you about people like Klompas and Eli David and Eli Levy or Elon Levy and all the rest of them. I honestly don't even think they look. I think they see something that has a little, you know, pithy little point to it, and they just go dump on the Twitter. And you know, or then share it three more times over the next 2 days, right? It's just they continually push these propaganda pieces, and it just doesn't matter whether it's true until it gets enough attention and they remove it. It's just constant. So here's another example. This is a U.S. politician, I guess, more co-opted U.S. politician, and he is here talking about provably false information. Provably false. Now, that either means that he's so shockingly uninformed, which is alarming when you think about it, especially when you realize that he's getting lots of money from AIPAC and all sorts of other things that are counter to U.S. interests, or he knows he's lying to you for the interest of Israel, which allows a genocide to continue. Either way, this is terrifying. And it's not just him. It's not just left and right. It's clear. And here's, I'll play this first part of it, not the whole thing, and then we'll go through the very clear evidence of why he's lying.
Speaker Johnson, thanks for your time. Obviously, there's a lot going on in Congress right now. You've chosen to travel to New York, and as you were just out on those steps calling the resignation of the president of here of Columbia, there was heckling, there was shouting. That was not a warm reception.
Enjoy your free speech.
I love that he says that because he contradicts that right in this interview. Enjoy your free speech, right? In this interview, he goes on to say that what they're doing is not protected by free speech. It just shows you that it's just about whatever works for you in the moment. That's politics, guys. All of them, in my opinion.
Surprised at all by what happened?
Well, there was a sea of students who apparently have been involved in the protest here, and I'm not surprised that they didn't welcome our visit because we're calling out their activities. The point we tried to make today is that this is not who we are as Americans. This is not...
To protest for what you believe in? How is that not the epitome of what we at least pretend this country is? You know what I mean? Like, so the argument is not whether the idea is what we are. It's that you're not allowed to feel for this conversation that way, right? Because the whole point is in this country, we tell ourselves that you have a right to think what you want. You have a right to say what you want. And you have a right to petition the government for what you want. Those are your rights in some of them anyway, inherent. So what's different here? They're protesting. They're in every single case, you can clearly see they're nonviolent, other for the random occurrence and very clear, as we'll get into, deliberate inciting by infiltrated entities, which is a provable reality here. And it always is on any side of this, whether it's the police or it's just this is how it works. People politically manipulate their side. It's the two-party illusion in most cases. The bottom line, I was going to say one more thing there, but the point is that you're supposed to believe that you can stand up and protest for what you want. And you can stand back and go, well, I think you're disgusting. I think you're what people marching back for KKK or whatever. And the point is, that's disgusting. You're a racist POS, but you have a right to do it. But apparently not today. Apparently you're un-American if you protest for the wrong things. Well, all that shows you is they don't believe any of it. It's like saying you have free speech, except you can't say that. It's a very stupid thing to say. This is a member of Congress who doesn't understand that or doesn't care.
Because we're calling out their activities. The point we tried to make today is that this is not who we are as Americans. This is not an expression of the First Amendment. This is not.
Oops, you just said it was, though. You just said it was. As speaking to those people, you said enjoy your free speech. Now it's not? I mean, you can't even be consistent in that small point. It's because, again, you'll say whatever works for your agenda in the moment.
Not an exchange of ideas. This is threats and intimidation of violence.
Nope, not even remotely. The only reason they're saying that is because they claim that those words, wink, wink, mean violence, even though they'll openly tell you they don't. But then they go, but they do, though. We know, secretly. They're lying.
Against Jewish students for who they are, for their faith.
Nope, not even remotely. They're outwardly screaming that's not the case. And in fact, as we'll show you, easily half of this entire thing are Jewish people, Jewish communities, Jewish protest groups, parts of the people at these schools who are Jewish, who are outwardly standing up and saying, we are not threatened. I haven't had one negative thing said to me this whole time. All we're doing is fighting for the solidarity of Palestine. But here he is lying about it. Why? Because he was given talking points, in my opinion.
And that's a terrible trend that's going on in the country right now. We have these similar types of activities and what are becoming violent protests on campuses around.
No, they're not. And the point, other than we can see them getting clashes. Like, if you send out the police to violently remove peaceful protesters with their hand in the air and then turn around and call it a violent protest, it's just like, it's the same as January 6th. It's nonsense. Now, I'm not saying that's because January 6th, there were no crimes or no violence. I'm saying it's because you are pretending something that is clearly not that is that. It wasn't an insurrection, and you guys still make that claim. It's the same point here, right? I mean, it's just obvious that you're trying to put the narrative over what's happening. On top of that, we can prove, apparently, this is an Al Jazeera investigation, that these people are caught on the film openly saying their job is to go in and incite violence. But we'll just ignore that.
On the country, and members of Congress, I believe, have an obligation, a responsibility to speak about this and to demand that it come to an end, because it's not good for us.
The main thing they were chanting was free Palestine.
Yep. I mean, even CNN can say, I mean, and now to be clear, this interview is terrible because she doesn't push back on any of the very obvious lies that even they have pointed out. Why not? That's cowardice to me. That's because you're trying to walk a fine line by looking like you care about the truth, but still kind of towing the lines that need to, you know, just secretly wink over at Israel and be like, look, we still have your back. Like, that's the kind of thing that I think is happening within these corporate dynamics, because they've lost control of everything. But free Palestine does not mean anything but free Palestine. And by the way, free Palestine does not even have to mean at the expense of Israel. It just means stop controlling everything Palestinians do, give them their own territory, and leave them the hell alone. That's what the two-state solution was supposed to be. And the only thing that stopped that was Israel. And everybody should know that now. It's on the record today.
How is that anti-Semitic?
Well, what's anti-Semitic is that Hamas endorsed this protest today. But
think about how stupid that is. First of all, how in the world do we know that? I mean, let's realize that the people that they have cuddled away over in Qatar, secretly in their little office buildings that have, you know, these are the people they gave the $1.4 billion to, that weirdly speak up every so often and say the thing that Israel wants you to think they want, even though over here you've got the group in Gaza not asking for those things. So it's very clear that there's a divide. There's obviously people that are still influenced by Israel's funding and whatever else, and those that are not. And so first, that's the first point. Secondly, who the hell cares what a group stands up and says? So just look, what if tomorrow the KKK spoke up and said, we endorse Speaker Johnson. Does that mean you're a white supremacist? It might, but it doesn't. Right? I mean, I should say it might, but the point is that doesn't by default mean that. It's just a hypothetical. It could, but at the end of the day, anybody can endorse anything. So him saying that seems very engineered. That's what I mean by, oh, hey, Hamas-controlled members that we pay, speak up and say the thing we want you to say today. Now, I'm not saying I know that happened, but we have to consider that, or the simple fact that it could have been a complete lie. But on top of all of that, just because Hamas speaks up and says, we support what's happening here, does not mean that they're even on the same page. Like, let's go from the other side of the conversation. How about the fact that Hamas goes, hey, and I'm talking about the people that are fighting for resistance, those people are fighting for our same cause. We support fighting for legal resistance. To them, there is no such thing, because they ignore international law. They ignore the 14th Geneva Convention. They ignore everything. So when they say resistance, they go terrorism, even as they march around the world and commit open terrorism everywhere. That's how stupid this is. So because Hamas supports them, they're anti-Semitic? I mean, try to work that logic out for me. How in the world are they suddenly anti-Semitic because a group you claim hates Jews says this is a good cause? You could argue that that might mean that, but see how flimsy this becomes? And her question was, is free Palestine anti-Semitic? And he goes, I'll tell you what is. That wasn't the question. These people are disgusting, deceitful liars. I mean, there's no way to misunderstand this. This guy is maneuvering this conversation to put out an agenda. He is not on your side.
Within the last 2 hours, they issued an endorsement statement and heralded the students here and said, this is the next generation of leadership in America.
You know what? I agree. Because these are people that actually understand the law and actually understand human rights and actually understand that this is something that we should not be doing. Now, I'm not going to say leadership in this country, but these are people that, in my opinion, at least on this issue, because I'm willing to bet you more than half of them do not understand other things that we've screamed about over the last so many years, COVID-19, for example. But nonetheless, on this issue, they recognize the truth. That's how I see it. So how is it wrong to highlight them as leaders? because they want you to think they're all disgusting racists, as the people are that are, as he literally sits here and spouts openly racist concepts.
If you're getting endorsed by Hamas, that's not a good look. It's not a good sign. Some of these students apparently are unaware of the atrocities of October 7th, or they're denying it. They deny that.
How do you possibly know that? Did you ask all of them? And see, think about how stupid that is. I guarantee you they didn't speak to any of them. They didn't go around and take a petition. Do you believe this happened? Do you believe that happened? They're just pushing the idea that they're denying what happened to Jews. That's what they're trying to highlight, even though I'm willing to bet you anything that they don't deny anything other than what has been proven to be false. That's my opinion, or rather just my bet based on what they're talking about. Because if you go ask them, any of these people in these groups are going to acknowledge that there is an armed resistance that is legally protected, but also that most people I talk about are understanding that there were also crimes committed, because that's an honest stance around this. Children being taken are not justified. That's why the Zionist agenda has put out these fake stickers saying children are occupiers too. I've not met a single person that believes that. That's the narrative they're pushing, though. Now, guess what atrocity he goes on to cite?
Women and children were brutally raped and murdered.
Unproven. At the very least, unproven. Quite frankly, I think this has been overwhelmingly debunked, but to be completely objective, there's a woman that has claimed that she, the one person that's come out, and that there was that last story that claims she didn't say rape, but says she was sexually abused. They didn't even use the word rape in the article. I'm not sure why, but nonetheless, they said she claimed she was abused, and we shouldn't dismiss that. We should consider that she was. But without any provable evidence, you have to consider that it might not be true based on how many times they've continued to lie. The idea of believe women or believe anything without truly proving it, that's not journalism. That's propaganda. Even if she's telling the truth, you should need to prove these things, especially since they've been caught lying about 45 different angles, specifically around the rape conversation. But the next one is the real kicker.
Infants were placed into ovens and cooked alive.
He actually just said that. That's one of the most obvious lies that you can prove. And I mean, literally prove based on the people that were there, based on the people that lived in the kibbutz they claim this happened in, who have said that never happened. Or the fact that even the IDF has pointed out the information shows that only a couple of children were killed, none of which were in this situation. And there was only even one pregnant woman that had a child die when she was shot. And that's all that happened, which is sad and horrifying. But I'm willing to bet you that it was the IDF that shot her. That's my personal opinion. But either way, there were no babies that were burned in ovens. But here he is openly saying that. How? I mean, it's just so shocking that this is how deceitful this is. That the people supposedly in altruistic leadership positions fighting for freedom and democracy are just outwardly lying about some of the worst things we've ever heard of in order to maintain one of the worst things we've ever seen happening in our lifetimes. Freedom, democracy. That's who he is. Make sure that gets painted on his face. A genocide-supporting liar. It kills me. So as I said, it's incredible how these lies continue to be spread at the highest levels of co-opted power, and so few actually push back, even among those currently pontificating about why lying is bad. I hope you know who I'm pointing at, and that's the conversation that Tucker just had about why we should just not lie. It's like, oh, what a great conversation. What an insightful concept. The bottom line is, where are they calling out the endless procession of lies coming from this obvious conversation? Now, I'm not saying that they are obligated to do that, but I kind of think it's impossible not to recognize that this is one of the biggest stories we've ever been lived through in general. I mean, when's the last time? I mean, a genocide being taking place in front of us with so many lies around this from the highest levels of power, and we're not even talking about it. At least in the conversation of the Tucker on X and Elon Musk and all that big push for freedom, right? In any case, here's October 7th fact check that breaks this down. He again says they deny infants were placed into ovens burned alive. It says tonight, Speaker Mike Johnson repeated the babies in ovens lie on CNN, unchallenged by Aaron Burnett, by the way, and ignorantly castigates protesters for denying it. Now, Haaretz was the platform that first really broke this down. The story originally from Eli Beer at the United Hatzalah, who said they found a dead baby in an oven. It was, in fact, the Daily Mail, which Haaretz also called out, who then took the lie even further by making it babies, plural. Not true. Victim data proved the entire event false, and that and then even United Hatzalah admitted their mistake. And here's the actual screenshot, but the story is not true. I have it right here for you. It says another story that was released. And by the way, this entire article is about all things that are lied about. The headline being Hamas massacre dragged the spread of atrocities that not all happened in reality. This is the actual Hebrew version I've translated because I find this to be more specific, but the title's different. Here's what it says, just on that one story. And you should read this if you haven't yet. Another story that was released a few weeks ago, and this is, you know, obviously a while ago this came out, was particularly difficult and extreme. Rescue Union President Eli Beer, or B-E-R, however you spell it, told of a baby who was put in a baking oven and burned to death. Beer said the same as a U.S. donor conference, so he repeated the lie. And from there, the story rolled. Media covered it. Corporate media said it was true. Even Biden and different people made these statements. 40 beheaded babies. That's also mentioned in this discussion as a false story. It's even published earlier this month by the Daily Mail, where baby became babies. However, the story is also not true. This is corporate media at the highest level of Israeli media. Haaretz. Here's one of the examples of this going around on October 31st. An Israeli first responder recalls tending to the body of a baby burnt in an oven. This guy lied, guys. This guy knowingly lied about this. How do you explain that? How do you really understand that outside of realizing that this was either pressured to happen by the Israeli government or this guy just decided to make up a story for the interest of Israel? Either way, that's pretty damn disgusting because what's ultimately happened as a response is Israeli IDF members murdering people based on the idea that this happened to them. That's why this was done. As Sam Husseini has been saying from the beginning, the reason the 40 beheaded babies lie was spread so that you would ignore all the children killed in Gaza. Here's the Christian Post. Hamas burned a baby in an oven, beheaded children. At the very least, they said, says Israel first responder, but they reported the story without any evidence. Whatever happened to two sources? I guess that doesn't apply when it's Israel or any corporate media today, right? Here's Jerusalem Post, which, by the way, is really showing itself to be an aggressive manipulator, which a lot of these are, but really more so today. But this is an older one from November, again, saying controversy surrounds reports of Israeli baby found burned alive in an oven. Nope. Fake story. And here's the Daily Mail turning it into babies, lying with nothing to back it up. Here was even an interesting story we covered. This is from November 9th, 2023. Times of Israel. French model was arrested, actually arrested, when she mocked the report of a baby burned by Hamas terrorists. You know why? Because she said it was fake. Why? Because she read the report and actually understood the truth. And yet she still got arrested for this in Paris. Here, again, and what's funny about this is you have situations where somebody like Susan Sarandon, who there's a countless things I'm sure we disagree on around vaccines and COVID-19 and everything else, Great Reset, climate change, but for whatever reason, she sees this. And she's been pushing back and consistently on this, and good for her on that. You know, we should be mature enough to be able to support positive things from whether or not people are, like, even this is my point, even if corporate media is coming out and doing the right thing for a very dishonest reason, we should still go, that's the truth. Doesn't mean you blindly support Susan Sarandon or CNN. It just means that we can acknowledge the truth when it is spoken. Here, she's being, I'm not sure who this is, this person, I'm not sure if this is Tamara. I can't see close enough. I don't think it is. But this is Israel MFA, Israel Foreign Ministry. She's part of the Israel government, okay? And she says, nothing to see here, just Susan Sarandon advocating for Hamas terrorists, first of all, which didn't happen, and denying the rape and murder of Israeli women, which also didn't happen. At the very least, you could have just said she denies the baby in an oven. But you have, this is my point about the Zionist, specifically Israeli government, that they will just wholesale, whole cloth, make up lies on top of things that you don't even need to lie about. Like, other than the fact that she's knowingly telling the truth about the baby in the oven that didn't happen, that's a lie. But my point is, why cobble onto this the things that she didn't even say? Because that you watch the video and you're like, there's nowhere in there where she says any of that. It's because this is just an act of desperation to try to constantly propagandize you into the corner. But this person is very clumsily trying to ask her this question. And here's what she says.
I know that all of those myths about babies in ovens and the rapes have all been denied.
It's not a myth. I'm sorry. You're denying the terror actions that have been made in October 7th.
You're denying the terror actions that have been made in October 7th.
So many innocent civilians.
I mean, just, you know, clearly trying to accost her in the street, you know? I mean, she... Now, she's a public figure in a sense, but not a politician, right? So there is clearly a line when you're accosting a civilian, right? But nonetheless, here's what I wrote. Or she's just acknowledging the reality that these are lies, because they are, as even Haaretz has proven. Baby in the oven was the main central point. The rapes, like same point, have been unproven. And where does she advocate for Hamas? Where did that happen? What you're doing is pretending by because she says those are lies, that means that she is advocating, but that's an assumption. And I'm so damn tired of these very flimsy people at very high positions of power just casually lying about things like this and nobody pushes back. I said, oh, I see. You're just playing it fast and loose with the words meaning, just as you do with anti-Semitism. Zionist lie. Exactly. Now, this is the part that really kind of killed me. This is why this is being focused on. Wizard Bizan points out that yesterday on the 24th, still in the first month of spring, so it's not as hot as it will get, Malak Saeed Al-Yazi, a five-year-old baby girl, died of heat in her family's tent in Rafah. You know, that's in between bombing, so good. I'm glad that the family didn't get bombed as well, or on top of that, because they are bombing in Rafah, even though they pretend like we're waiting for something. They're doing it right now. This child just died in the tent. Why? Because they're there. Because they're living there without water, without food, in many cases, and suffering in a tent in the middle of a hot summer, or spring, rather. And it's going to be hotter, as the temperature was reaching 39 to 41 degrees Celsius, and even higher in the tents, which are made as agricultural greenhouses. No big deal, though. Another child dies for no reason because they're maintaining a genocide. And this is the point. Fatima writes, a lie about a baby in an oven? Manufactured consent for this. Exactly. And on top of that, I'll include this again. Lie upon lie upon lie. As Muhammad Shihada writes, these are dozens, and there's plenty more than that, of conclusively debunked Israeli government lies. I'm not talking about just that we disagree. We're talking about stories that have been broken down by corporate media or Al Jazeera proving that the one you can see right there, that these are not the tunnels they claim they are. In fact, in one case, one of these, it was very clear. Yeah, this is the one. What they were showing you here next to it proved that this was not a tunnel. In fact, I believe it was a water access or something like that. The point was, it was openly proven, covered by corporate media. And the bottom line is you can go through and see over and over, just like the one I just showed you. Well, they deleted the tweet because they lied. It's just a constant series of lies, and your government knows that, and they don't care. And we're going to get to one that's going to pain you to watch. Oh, I forgot to actually look up his name again. Was it Vittel or Patel? I forget his name. The secondary spokesperson junior for the State Department, who's just... Again, I said this the other day. This one's even worse. One of the worst examples of how bad he's getting. I think this guy hates his job, if you want my honest opinion. I can see it on his face. My point is that he is lying. He knows they're lying. And all they can do is just sidestep, 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 as everyone in that room knows they're lying. Oh, that's right. We're gonna go to that at the end here. This is what I was talking about. That's the mass grave conversation. But before we go to the mass graves, let's talk about the campus protest conversation, because that's in fact what Mike Johnson was talking about, pretending that they were all racist and liars. Patel, thank you. Oh, is it Patel's his first name? Yeah, let me know in the chat. But the point is, they're trying to frame all of these people as racist, because what the truth is that it's solidarity. And this is what I'm going to show you, like I showed you last time. Endless amounts of massive groups of Jewish people, of Israelis, of people that are there supporting human rights. Black people, white people, Muslims, everybody, Christians. It's showing you, this is bringing everybody together except wild, belligerent Zionist supporters and the governments that blindly support that. I mean, that's really what's happening. I mean, quite frankly, you could talk about this as if this is some kind of a revolution right now. Now, I'm not going to argue that that means that this is going to automatically fall in the place that it should. Every single time we've got these kind of moments of momentum, the government is already finding 35 different ways to channel that back into something else. Just like we're seeing it, like we've already talked about, in fact. But nonetheless, there is an opportunity right now. And in my opinion, this is a, we're seeing through the crack in that door. We are seeing the truth for this brief moment, and we need to capitalize on it. The world around has acknowledged the truth of this, and they're desperately trying to hide it again. But we can change things right now because of that. And I believe that that is somewhat of a movement. And I don't mean organized. I just mean that people have recognized that we all believe, we believe in the human rights and freedom. They've been shoving it down our throats our entire lives, and we should believe in that. They don't believe in that. And that schism has become impossible to ignore. So when we're talking about what's going on these on these campuses, I'm not saying I agree with even the majority of what these people believe. I don't know. I would argue a lot of the things we probably disagree with around medical freedom and a lot and climate change, but nonetheless, you are seeing that solidarity happen in these college campuses of people standing up, standing against the violent government, peacefully, hands in the air, fighting for freedom, for self-determination, side by side, locked armed with Jewish people, with Muslims, with Christians, all standing there saying, "We see you." You know how upsetting that is to the Zionist control structure of the people out there that don't want you to see it? It's terrifying to them. So here is it's the chair of the philosophy department at Emory University. Noel McAfee has just been arrested for supporting these protests. It says, "We are going down a very dangerous path filled with blatant disregard for fundamental civil liberties." Now, of course, you're going to see comments down below of Republicans going, "Yeah, tear us apart." Well, the reality should be that you, especially as a Republican, should be going, "Hold on a second. Doesn't she have a right to stand up and protest and fight for the things she believes in? Aren't those the constitutional rights that we're screaming about? Except for her, though. Except for that topic. Except for those people." Ignorance. That is either people that don't really believe in what they say, or they're being manipulated by their government. The truth is, it's very clear to me that this is getting out of control, and you're now seeing the truth of what we really live under.
"Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry. Is there anything I can do for you right now?"
"Fill up philosophy department?"
"Yes, call the philosophy department office."
I will. What's your...
"I'm chair of the philosophy department."
"I got you. I got you."
And this is just the smallest example, right? So now you got the faculty trying to join and being arrested. You got people on the ground. Oh, here's what Aviva Klompas said about her, which again, this is my exact point. I'm willing to bet you my life that she doesn't even know who this person is, doesn't know anything about what happened, just simply saw the video and just blurted what she wants you to think is happening. That's what they're all doing. And she said the chair of the philosophy department being led away by police. But what she's really doing is relishing this moment by making fun of them. She says she will have plenty of time to ponder what is the meaning of life spent supporting terror groups. Is that what she's doing? You know what I mean? It's just disgusting and willfully dishonest. No, I mean, what they're stating, at the very least, I don't know what's in her mind, is that they're supporting Palestinian self-determination. You just ignorantly framed that as supporting terrorism, even though your government supported the group that you're pointing at and saying terrorism. That's pretty dumb. But this is the world we live in. These are the people that are influencing power. Now here, interestingly enough, is a Fox News reporter. Now, actually, what it looks like is just the cameraman, quite frankly. But what's crazy about this is there's no way anybody can pretend that this is justified. You're talking about a reporter who is standing there with his camera. I mean, this is a classic example of a First Amendment. Like, what they're talking about is a person who has a right to the freedom of press and is filming the protest. But because they're there, they don't. And I agree with the framing of this by Robin Minotti, which is that it's because they were filming it, which is exactly what Israel does in Gaza and everywhere else. This was a Fox News reporter that was assaulted and arrested by the police. And you can see for yourself, all he was doing was filming. It says, just like in Gaza, Israelis picked out and killed the journalists one by one. In Texas, state troopers are now picking out and assaulting video reporters. Fascism comes home to roost.
Move back.
I mean, what? How do we justify that at all? I mean, how do you justify the idea that people are protest? Like, this is how you get into the idea, and which we'll get into next, of agent provocateurs, of infiltrators. Now, I think those are different. When I think of an agent provocateur, I think of an agent, like an authority figure, an FBI agent or a policeman acting as something else. What we're going to talk about today specifically is infiltrators, average people who are being funded by power structures to go in there and act like they're racist, to go in there and cause violence as an Israeli supporter so they can act the victim. This is real stuff. I'm not saying that's every case all the time, but it is happening and we can prove it. And I've shown you this many times before. What's wild to me is that you can see these people acting nonviolently and being, including a journalist, and getting beaten up and arrested for it. The reality, sadly, is this is where we've always been. We are just now, some people, just seeing it. Now, that's not the way it should be. If we had a government that in any way respected your inherent rights, you know, the Constitution they swear an oath to, they wouldn't be doing this. The truth is they just don't care because they don't believe those things. They believe they need you to believe they believe those things. Trump, Biden, all of them. Here's Greg Abbott, another person who swore an oath to that Constitution who doesn't care about it. Also somebody who has sworn an oath to Israel many times over in regard to countless things they've done. He signed a BDS, an anti-BDS law, which, by the way, is inherently unconstitutional. Proudly signed it into law, saying that you're not allowed to protest BDS. Well, here's another thing you're not allowed to protest in the state of Texas. Why? Because this guy is a Zionist manipulator. He says arrest being made right now and will continue until the crowd disperses. Right? There's no violence. We're talking about the crowd that's there that they don't want there. He says these protesters belong in jail. Why is that? Were there crimes committed? Anti-Semitism will not be tolerated. Aha. And that's the whole point about all of this. His aggressive push, BDS, anti-BDS, going to Israel as a governor, which makes no sense to me. In a context of politics, why there's foreign relations should be done by the executive branch, not a random guy. The bottom line is he's saying that these people are racist because they are fighting for Palestine, which we then say wink wink means they hate Jews. Therefore, they're racist and dangerous and violent because of that. Not actually doing things that are violent, except for the few random things. And this is the reality of if a massive protest is happening and somebody does something wrong over here, then you don't get to use that to justify attacking everybody. And that's to say that there might actually be an individual that just doesn't care. But then we also have to realize that, as I said, they bring these things and then point to them to justify violence. It says students joining in hate-filled anti-Semitic protests at any public college or university should be expelled. So now you're literally telling them you're not allowed to protest for these things because we've decided they're disgusting. Well, that's not how the Constitution works, bud. And you know what? I think you know that. I just know that you don't care about it. It's terrifying, isn't it? Now here, Cuz News Network points out scenes from Emory University in Atlanta showing Georgia State Patrol and police violently attacking pro-Palestinian students, nonviolent, with nothing in their hands. Tens of students were arrested after authorities repeatedly used tasers, pepper guns, and forcefully dispersed gathering within the university campus. There's plenty of videos of them literally tasing people who are restrained, which is a crime, by the way, and can actually kill somebody. Holding them, tasering for 30 seconds straight while they're being held down on the ground. How do you even justify that? Now this, as it says, automatic weapons against unarmed teenagers. America is deranged, is what they say in the quote.
Get back. Disperse.
Back up! That's incredible.
Back up!
This is the reality of your government, guys. Right, exactly what I was going to say, Pepper. Right, I mean, like, the truth of this is you could, historically, and this is what somebody already pointed out, when they were going, we're going to call the National Guard for protesters? Well, what happened last time that happened? Right? Kent University talking about the shooting of civilians during a protest. But let's just try that angle again and see what happens. Well, at the very least, they're not using real guns, it seems. Pepper shooting. But the bottom line is, this is a gigantic violation. I mean, I'm willing to bet you that this is going to swing back around. I mean, it's hard to ignore this. Somebody's going to put this to court, and some judge who actually understands their job and believes in the Constitution is going to make a point about this. I hope. But it's not going to change what it did now and the lies it spun around it.
We're with CNN. We're with CNN.
Bro, go that way.
We're with CNN.
Move.
We're with CNN.
Move that way.
Yep, and then looks like he's about to take him down too, right? No respect for any constitutional right, whether it's press, freedom of speech, doesn't matter. Oh, how did I get that? Oh, I hit the wrong button. Here we go. Here's another one. Of course, Elon Levy chimes in. You know, this is a unemployed guy in his basement somewhere who just keeps screaming about how people are racist, even though he's the racist. He says the Jewish peoples, as if he has the right to speak for every Jewish person that practices that religion in the world, right? He says the Jewish people's best hope right now is that there exists a sane majority that will rise up against this cultish madness and put it back in its place. Just the hubris, the disgusting hubris of this person. It says, and this is Israel War Room saying, stunning video from, by the way, the Israel War Room, which has been caught lying thousands of times since it started. Maybe not thousands, but quite a bit. Stunning video from Harvard where a pro-Hamas mob has infiltrated the Harvard campus and started setting up another pro-terrorist encampment. What does that mean? People at Harvard have started bringing tents because they're going to protest. So all you just, the jump to, because they're protesting for Palestine and because they're doing this and because we claim over here went bad, we're going to immediately call people that are beginning a protest pro-Hamas, pro-terror, pro... This is why nobody takes this seriously right now other than people blindly supporting this agenda, because it's childishly stupid. Now, you could be right, but my point is he doesn't even care. These people are just protesting, and even if you do think they're protesting for Hamas, they still have a right to do so. This is at least former member of the government of Israel openly calling for violence against people in the United States who are acting within their rights. Here's what he said. This is what Ozen says. Elon, about 50% of this, quote, cult are Jewish students. Or do they not count as Jewish in your eyes? Well, exactly the point. They don't care about that. In fact, they're desperate to hope that you don't see that. And this is exactly the same point. Same tweet and people commenting. Oh, you forgot one more thing. Here's all these people protesting there saying, Jews say stop arming Israel. One is free until everyone is free. No one is free until everyone is free, kind of a statement. And this is, I think, this is the Jewish Voices for Peace. From the beginning, they've been saying this. Same thing under this tweet. Here's another one. Jews say free Palestine. Like, you just can't keep lying about this with the obvious reality that this has become completely nonpartisan, completely across all boundaries. Because that's what this has done. Their belligerence has brought the world together in this moment. And we need to try to capitalize on that. But you're going to get people in the partisanship, the screamers and the two-party illusion who are going to shout you down acting like you're falling for some trap. We're not blindly believing anything. We're simply acknowledging that there's solidarity. There is alignment right now for actual truth and human rights and nonviolence, whether or not we disagree on everything else that we need to take advantage of. It's just maturity to be able to do that and not blindly fall into everything else. You know, both of which are things that two-party illusion obviously lack. But here's another Jewish person standing up and telling you something that is hard for her, which is, first of all, that she's there supporting Palestine. Secondly, that she's had to hide her identity before that. Now, why do you think that is? Just like the idea of whistleblower, because they will be hurt, attacked, even worse. We've already shown you this historically by settlers, by Israeli entities, if they do this.
This is the first time I am using my full real name to stand in solidarity with Palestinians. And I don't deserve applause because I am too late. Because every single day that we don't speak out as Jews in support of Palestinian liberation is another day too late. I grew up in a Jewish American school system that was explicitly Zionist. I feel like we've all heard stories, but that didn't just make sure we didn't talk about Palestine, but actively taught us not to empathize with Palestinians.
Exactly.
But we're here now, and I never thought in my life that I would be standing with this many Jews for Palestine. And the fact that I see Jewish teenagers sitting here with posters that say that they stand with Palestinians is mind-blowing. And there was one of us, and there will be five of them, and there will be 15 in the next generation. And we will continue pulling our ranks together until Palestine is free.
This is my point, guys. This is my point. This is
Talia.
Oops, here, hold on. She says her name.
Until Palestine is free. My name is Talia.
The point is, guys, this is happening. In my opinion, this is very real. And the point is that this is shattering all sorts of conversations and illusions that have been held. And that's very important. It's powerful. And it challenges the core lie they're spreading right now, which is that this is only a bunch of people hating Jews. It's not. And it's very clear that there's a huge, I mean, it does seem to be a, if not half this whole thing, that there is a lot of people out there that are very clearly standing openly as Jews with Palestine. You just can't hide that fact. Now, how do you pretend that's not there as the Elon Levies of the world? Because they're liars. And here, again, same point as another example. And this, these are all different locations, different college campuses. So you just can't keep pretending what they're saying is true. It's obviously not. This says inside the Passover cedar on Columbia's Gaza protest encampment. You know, the Columbia, the one that's taken all of the focus. Here is an entire, this is on a Jewish holiday where they're sitting down there celebrating this Jewish holiday with other Muslims and Christians and people fighting for Palestine. You just can't pretend this is what's happening or what they're saying. It's self-evident that it's not.
Have some matzah, come have some matzah ball soup. We're having a great time. We got plenty to go for everyone. And we'll be out here having a really lovely holiday.
Columbia University has been at the center of pro-Palestinian protests for more than a week. Safety concerns have been raised by Jewish students on campus, but as Passover week begins, a group of Jewish and non-Jewish protesters have gathered at the university to celebrate.
There is nowhere else I should be for Passover besides here on campus.
Passover is the story of our escape from slavery in the land of Egypt. And I think we need to recognize that on Passover, it's important to stand up for oppressed people everywhere, whether they're Jewish or not.
If our gathering does not motivate us to do everything in our power to end the genocidal violence Israel is unleashing upon Gaza, we will not have fulfilled the requirements of the Passover Seder.
I am Jewish, and to me, Passover symbolizes perseverance and resilience. And I think this encampment encompasses those two ideals because we have seen the university take countless measures to try to suppress our student activism, and here is us persevering through that.
I had seen so many statements online about how Jews weren't safe, about how Columbia had turned into a hotbed of anti-Semitism. Each of those statements further galvanized me to use my voice and my privilege as a Jewish person to come here and have a Seder with all of these lovely people.
I'm part of a really proud legacy of progressive Jewish activists who have participated in things like the civil rights movement or the anti-apartheid movement in the 80s, where it's so important to us to transcend the barriers of race, class, ethnicity, religion. And that's what's happening here today. And there's a lot of joy here, I think, really for the first time on campus in months.
There are also many non-Jewish students who joined the Seder, and we're a little bit hesitant about whether they should eat matzah or not. But we told them it was okay, you can try some matzah. It was really a beautiful thing to see in the middle of the pro-Palestinian encampment.
Think about how wildly different that is than what you're seeing for people like this. Right? If Jewish people's best hope, like that's the last hope. we're doomed if we don't do this. Like it's like the image of showing you the Eiffel Tower with missiles and saying, if you don't stop Iran, they're coming for you next. There's just such hyperbole and conjecture and just absolute cartoonish narratives. The Jewish people's best hope right now is that there exists a sane majority that will rise up against this cultish madness. That's cultish madness? No, you're literally describing Zionism. And that's what's happening. You see, that's the reverse. That's what they're scared of. The majority is rising up and it is calling out this cultish madness. They're pointing at you, bud. That's what's happening. So important, guys. Here is another important clip. Holocaust survivor, a message to U.S. campus protesters. What do you think it is?
Holocaust survivor, my message to the brave student protesters in America is just keep doing it. Don't give up. We are doing exactly the same. And in the long term, we are going to prevail. I'm out from the beginning at every march, a small group of survivors and descendants of survivors demonstrate disagreement with the use of the Holocaust experience as a cover by the Zionists and the State of Israel.
What's happening on America's college campuses is horrific. This is reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s.
The way that the Israeli government is using the memory of the Holocaust in order to justify what they are doing to the Gazans is a complete insult to the memory of the Holocaust. And we stand repeated in the last few demos carrying placards hanging from the neck saying this survivor of the Holocaust is against the genocide in Gaza. And we also demonstrate against the conflating of Jewishness with Zionism, which right. is what the Israeli state is trying to do.
How do you ignore something like this? Well, that's all you do. That's all they do is just ignore it. They don't challenge it. They don't call him an anti-Semite. They just ignore it because that would be pretty stupid. Pointing out somebody who is, you know, I mean, what it really comes back to is the reality of the history around that time and what the Zionists were actually doing. The reality is that they are simply saying what they see. Calling out their opinions. And what it ultimately shows you is that there is not an all-encompassing, one-sided narrative here. And the truth is that the more and more people, and I'm beginning to think it's becoming the majority. I've said that for a while now. And I think I was right about the last time I made that point, but I just feel this momentum happening that a lot of Jewish people in the world have become shockingly aware of what's really going on. And a lot of these are people that are just simply, you know, they've, you know, that they're Jewish. They're not super invested. There's a lot of people like that, like Christians, for example, that are born into Christian families that don't really go to church. They consider themselves Christians, but they're not avid Orthodox Christians or going every day. My point is those are people that are passively in that category, whether Christian or Jewish, but, you know, still have their beliefs. And yet now when you're looking at 15,000 murdered children, when you're looking at videos of assassinations and IDFers telling you that and Holocaust members going, this is wrong, suddenly they start to challenge these things. And it's snowballing. It is an avalanche, guys. It's very clearly happening right now. Oh, dang it. Can you guys hear that? It looks like we're kind of having an issue here all of a sudden. Let me see if that plays. Oh, what is going on?
Eek.
So it looks like it's just that video. You gotta be kidding me. Hold on.
A Holocaust survivor are against that of Jewishness with Zionism, which is what the Israeli state is trying to do, which does nothing else but increases anti-Semitism.
Yep.
So we are trying to counter that by demonstrating that Jews and Holocaust survivors are against that. We have tremendously warm reception and appreciation from the typical members of the march. We get handshakes and hugs, and some people stand and some women cry seeing the placards. It's a great and warm experience. When the right-wing section of the present government is trying to press for the banning of these marches on the grounds that they create no-go areas for Jews and you know, they are anti-Semitic. We know that this is complete rubbish, and the very opposite is true.
How
Today's
powerful.
Marches are having a very hopeful aspect, that it is so large, so persistent, so global, that eventually the Western leadership, which are trying to deny what is actually going on, will be forced to face up to it. And I think we are not far from that. I think there was no parallel to that in the Jewish Holocaust experience. In fact, there was great abandonment, certainly from the leadership of the country. There were some, very few, very brave people who risked everything to be on the right side of history and to rescue as much as possible.
And a lot of the people that have ended up in positions of power throughout our government were not some of those people. Or even people like, you know, Soros, all these different overlaps there in history when you look back into it, or Klaus, or, you know, these realities that these are the people that actually didn't do that. In fact, leaned the other direction, just like Zionism, despite all the lies we hear.
But the majority of people were too afraid and looked the other way. There is a question of historic responsibility towards injustice, genocide, and fascism. If you are just indifferent, if you do not take a stand, you acquire a degree of guilt without any doubt. And I think it is imperative to assert opposition and even at some degree of disadvantage and risk, if you want to be guilt-free when history judges what's happening.
Yep.
Knowing how the mass media ignores the most important events, it makes it incredibly important to have forums like Double Down News to bring a much more balanced picture to the public.
I figured we would play that just because it's where this video came from. It's good done. Well done. I'm actually not familiar with the platform, but check it out. This video is great. I'm glad they put it out. So good on them. Here. Oh, wait, I think I've jumped ahead a little bit. Hold on. Here we go. This is also very relevant, isn't it? Especially since we're talking about these other mainstream alternative media aspects who are now champions of Twitter. And literally, you know, this is like Tucker on X, or, you know, Alex on X. Like, these are all, these are major platforms that are now facilitated through Twitter. And Twitter is not on our side. It's just unbelievable that this is even happening. But Censored Man calls it out. Elon Musk is straight up retweeting Netanyahu's propaganda now. That advertiser boycott really did a number on him, huh? It says, well, let me explain something to you, Elon. These are not anti-Semitic protests. They are anti-Israel protests, which, by the way, is obvious. Many Jews organize and partake in these demonstrations. He says, if you're more angry about a couple of college campuses being disrupted than you are about our tax dollars being used to fund a genocide, I got to say, you've got your priorities wrong, buddy. Elon Musk retweeted this. Benjamin Netanyahu says anti-Semitism on campuses in the United States is reminiscent of what happened in Germany universities of 1930s. The world cannot stand idly by. Really? The world can't stand idly by while people act in their First Amendment rights, but we're allowed to stand idly by while you commit genocide? Like, think about that overlap. It's just, it's crazy. Yeah, it looks like Katie K in the chat saying Double Down News has some good content. Maybe check it out. I'm just not one that I've seen before, but ultimately good stuff. I'm good to hear that from somebody in the chat. So here is an important end of this segment, showing you some really important clips. And this is an Al Jazeera investigation. And here's another, the longer clip of it, I guess. But this one's being overlapped by a TikTok guy, but I still wanted to show it. Some people are being paid to infiltrate the college protests, which, guys, whether we're talking about Israel or China or Russia, or this is always part of the game from both sides. So let's not pretend like this is like racist to point out. It's just what every side does. They're trying to politically they write about the term astroturfing. That's like faking these protests for your agendas, or inciting them for your agendas, right? He says they talk to these the video catches them on, you know, secret camera where they openly say this, inciting hate, chanting anti-Semitic slogans. They actually call it astrosurfing. At the end of the video, the organizer tells them that they go back to the office for some refreshments. So they're openly being paid to go in by pro-Israel platforms to go in and incite violence, to say anti-Semitic things, pretending to be pro-Palestine. How do we, it's just the reality of this is overwhelmingly clear, especially when you can see that these things need to be manufactured in order to make this argument.
I'm about to show you footage from an undercover Al Jazeera investigation that was actually blocked from release in the United States and then subsequently leaked online.
Which is also incredibly important. Who do you think asked that to be blocked, guys? Is that free speech? Is that freedom of press? Is that censorship? Yes. You know, like the idea that they're just going, not that one, because that says something, that highlights an important thing we don't want anyone to know about.
There's basically just like Noah Pollard coming in the book. There are these jihadis who basically are suicide bombing and they're at a campus and you have to stop them.
He's talking about people that are supporting a free Palestine. Basically jihadis that support bombing, suicide bombing. My God, think about the ignorance there.
Do you know what my worst nightmare is? I'm actually not kidding. It's a photo of Dion and I together. And we're just clearly identifiable. And they're like, oh, we're these like traitors who sold out to the Jewish conspiracy for money. I'm like, we did. We cost $50,000 plus benefits.
He literally just said, even if he's kind of being facetious, that they're going to say we sold out to the Jewish conspiracy. He goes, we did. They're paying us $50,000 to do this, which is true, by the way.
The way you're putting it kind of sounds a bit like astroturfing.
No. This is astroturfing. No, this is actually the definition. There's a bus.
What does that mean?
So it's when you set up things.
It's the difference between grassroots and astroturf.
It's not that astroturfing is wrong. It's just that like your astroturf has to be like committed.
Meaning that if you do, if our astroturfing for what we believe in is okay. It's only dishonest when the other side does it. That's straight out of Israeli and U.S. government foreign policy, right? It's only terrorism when you do it.
We have our people?
No, I'm not.
Support democratic society, but if you don't want to, we denounce extremist groups.
What do you think of this? You agree? Resistance? Child suicide bombers?
We don't support radical Islamic terrorism in this country.
We don't support suicide bombers.
Where's the suicide bomber even coming from in this conversation, right? I've made my points about that in the past. Their history around that is not what we think it is.
Children and women. They leave orphans.
What about all the children in Palestine, right? But the point is that this is the same thing that nobody with an honest or with integrity or intelligence is making the argument that the killing, if that happened, by the way, and was not the IDF, of civilians there were not, those aren't crimes. But the provable taking of children back, those are crimes. Nobody is saying not. The point is, even though those are crimes, it is still an act. The actual act of October 7th was an act of literal armed resistance protected under international law. No matter how much you conflate and lie about that, doesn't change that reality.
Kill babies in strollers. That'll bring peace.
Fake news. Yeah, but you just keep yelling all the atrocity propaganda, right? Because it works for you.
Yeah, Palestinian terrorists all over Israel. That would be it.
Real baby killers, these terrorists. They kill women, they kill children, they don't care about anything.
Right, so remember, the point is they're trying to draw people out. Because it's ridiculous. But you see, the problem is that it's interesting dynamic is that you have Israel paying, or Israel pro-Israel entities paying them to come out and incite. So you could argue they might not even really believe half the things they're saying. But what's interesting is that then gets phrased as what the reality is. The corporate media highlights this and the Israeli representatives get up and say the same thing. Mike Johnson comes out and says babies in ovens. So it's interesting that you have to realize that astroturfing genuinely, this is all fake. They know they're lying. They know they're lying. It all just ends up, but it nonetheless gets presented and packed by the corporate media. And even though they're calling out lies elsewhere, it's just it's whole cloth manufactured illusion. Now, you know, that doesn't mean that there aren't things that happen. Clearly things happen. My point is that you can see that this is a zombie agenda where we all see it and they just keep dragging it forward with fake information and bots and astroturfing.
All the time. Yeah, let's head back to headquarters for debriefing and cocktails.
Sure, I'll go smear some students. Why not? $50,000 plus benefits, cocktails at the end. This really is a sick game. And they do this because then you can create headlines like these.
Exactly. Well, here's the longer one. As it says for the podcast, these scenes show how the Hoover Institution and Emergency Committee for Israel astroturfed, or as they call it, astrosurfing, a protest against the Students for a Justice in Palestine conference in 2016. Yeah, so it's not new. Not because October 7th, which, by the way, should be applied to everything we're talking about around this conversation.
Like, we're going to be more pro-Israel than you can even imagine. Just to, like, provoke everyone. The majority of Americans are pro-Israel. Whereas, if you never go to Israel or the UK, it's just pure hatred.
Yeah.
Your country, like, basically let half of Pakistan move in. So you have a different problem than we do here.
The protesters are on a fellowship.
What he was overlining, that he was comparing that to the problem of the dirty, dangerous Palestinians that they want to get rid of. It's just, it's right on the surface of the way that people think, man. It's disgusting.
A program run by a conservative think tank called the Hoover Institution.
This is actually the first foot soldier.
And by the way, I mean, I shouldn't even have to say this, but clearly what I just said there was about what I'm arguing he thinks, not that I'm saying Palestinians are disgusting. Just in case there's somebody new who's tuning in right now. The point is that that's what they, you can see that. That's the same thing that I pointed out in the conversation of Rwanda and when the Israeli government was alongside them when that happened. Which is they were trying to use their hatred for the other side to push that, to make their own situation better, which then ended up creating a genocide in Rwanda, which they supported during, before, and after. It's all on the record. It's easy to prove.
Activity that I think
it's important
to do.
There's basically just like Noah Pollard coming in the book. There are these jihadis who basically support suicide bombing, and they're at a campus, and you have to stop them.
So, a chance to shout at Arabs?
As we're leaving, we mentioned to our boss yesterday that we're going. She's like, oh, yeah, that's mandatory. You need to go. Do you know what my worst nightmare is? I'm actually not kidding. It's a photo of Dion and I together.
I heard
and pulled out to the Jewish conspiracy for my best benefits. So they did a really job of getting me excited to show up and protest.
It's kind of, the way you're putting it kind of sounds a bit like astroturfing.
No. This is astroturfing. No, this is actually, there's a bus.
What does that mean?
It's when you say astroturf.
You're taking corporate money and you're manufacturing the image of a grassroots movement with corporate money by basically paying people to appear as activists.
It's not that astroturfing is wrong. It's just that, like, your astroturf has to be, like, committed.
If you do happen to speak with any reporters, just stay on message. And what is that message? SJP is a
hate group.
Hate group. BDS is a hate movement.
Jeez.
The only other thing you probably want to mention is that SJP endorses violence, terrorism, things like that. And you guys are going to be...
It's the point is, who cares if they even believe it? Just go out and say what we're paying you to say. That's the reality of this, guys. That's happening everywhere.
Great.
Hey, SJP, what do you think of this?
You agree? Resistance? Child suicide bombers?
Real baby killers, these terrorists. They kill women, they kill children, they don't care about anything.
Rape women too, all the time.
They're talking about Students for Justice in Palestine. Right. They're literally talking about a group fighting for justice and self-determination. And all they do, they're terrorists because we say they secretly hate Jews. It's disgusting. And what's even worse is they know they're making this stuff up and they just don't even care. They don't care that we can see it. And in case, since I mentioned it, I'll include my recent deep dive on the conversation of Rwanda overlap with Israel. And Robert just wrote a great article about it as well. Now here. Is what the one I was telling you earlier. This is incredible to me. As Adam points out, there is no one more entitled than a Zionist. That's his opinion, but I frankly agree with that in most cases. Douglas J. Davis falsely accuses an Uber driver of anti-Semitism. Why? Because they all couldn't fit in the car. But as it turns out, he ordered a car that wouldn't fit that many people. And then accuses them of being racist because he won't let them go in, which, by the way, is something they're not allowed to do. It's an Uber black thing, you know, with the higher level cars. But that's not even the worst part. It's when he gets in the conversation with the guy where he comes out to kind of go, look, man, I'm not racist. I'm trying to tell you that I'm not allowed to do this. He literally goes, you're threatening my children. It's like, what? What in the world is happening right now? And so you have to realize that, I mean, there's only a couple ways to look at this. This guy is either knowingly lying. I mean, not knowing this is going to become a public story, because he wants to gain something from it, which is pretty gross. Or he thinks he's going to use this to progress the agenda of Israel, but he knows he's lying about that. Or he's just a bad person who uses this, even though it's justifying terrible things against Palestinians. Watch this clip.
J. Davis falsely accused an Uber driver of anti-Semitism because his family was too big for the car.
I heard you say under your breath they look Jewish.
What?
What?
Four times Grammy Award winner booked an Uber black car for four instead of an SUV for five without child seats.
Because the Uber blacks are much nicer cars, right? So you want the fancy, nice car with all the amenities, but it won't fit the amount of people you have. And like a long time ago, way before I started doing this, I drove for Uber for a little bit. And I remember there's very specific things. Now, you could always skirt those laws or rules, but the point being that you can get in trouble, you could lose this or that. And the point is that, especially with those higher end cars, you're not supposed to do that. The point is that he just wants the nice thing and he thinks he's going to get what he wants. And when the guy simply goes, I'm sorry, I can't do that, he accuses him of being a racist. You just hate Jews. Isn't that just exactly what's happening in the world right now? Yes.
And when the driver refused to transport them for safety reasons, the man immediately started playing victim.
I'm being harassed.
Please explain. You know what happened to us here.
You're racially profiling us.
You're saying I racially profile you? You're five people. You book a black car.
Girls, go inside.
And you tell them I racial profile.
You're threatening me. I feel threatened.
For what?
You are threatening my children.
Say your what? Children.
You are threatening my
you
children.
You said that you're a lawyer. I am. Steve.
Now, here's the point. You see, he turned his phone on, right? And he started going, I'm threatened. You're threatening me. And of course, when that gets shared, which it clearly did, they all share it and go, oh my God, these racists are hating him because he's a Jew. But that's not what happened. He knowingly turned his phone on in order to create the dynamic, the illusion that this is what's happening. Now, who knows what his intent is, but that's just disgusting. And very clearly, this is what we can see in some cases. That no way does this mean every example of hatred toward Jewish people is a lie, or in any circumstance, every sign we should assume that they're manufacturing it. But we have to realize how truly prominent this is right now, specifically in the conversation of Zionist manipulation. Not Jewish people, not Israeli alone, Zionist manipulation.
You got out of the car. You are the aggressor. I'm closing the door. You're the aggressor. You got out and chased me.
I'll make sure that this.
Chase
you? Do that. Big shot. Let's see how far
Big
that
shot.
Gets you.
Five people.
Let's see how
back.
Far it gets
Let's
you.
Be honest.
You're the aggressor.
You're try for what?
You're the aggressor.
Ma'am, please. Call it.
I heard so you say. I heard you say under your breath they look Jewish.
What?
What? I heard you say.
Oh, my God. You are Jews. Sick.
He just changed what he said. So the first thing is under your breath that they look Jewish. Then immediately is you said you don't. I don't want to take Jews. Like it's on the record. He's even just changing up what was said.
I heard you say
you're sick. You're sick.
When the driver started to drive away, the man provoked him more.
You are sick. Fuck you. Leave me alone. Sick. You're sick.
So if he's the aggressor, why is he trying to call him back out of the car? He is. He's waving him back out. I mean, it is really bad, guys. This is bad. And these people exist. And it's not just in the Israeli conversation. You could find this kind of maniac in a lot of different political conversations. But remember, we already saw this. I forget the guy's name right now, and I wish I remembered it. The guy that was hassling that kebab vendor, remember? And multiple examples of it. It turns out that he wasn't just being misunderstood. This guy is an inherent. This goes back to the Obama administration and before, and he's involved with some pretty disgusting foreign policy actions. Remember, he threatened, he said, I'll have a guy in Egypt pull out your fingernails. He literally said that to this guy. Frankly, I think he meant it. I think that's what, I mean, I forget what platform overlapped that they showed. This is stuff that he's been involved with in foreign policy. So the reality is he was just hating these people, making fun of them because they were who they were. Not because they said anything gross or racist, but because they were something he didn't like. So he is the bad person. This guy should be called out. And hopefully, I think this is going around right now. Hopefully this becomes wildly viral and everybody calls him out for how disgusting he is for using these things, actually diminishing the reality of what racism looks like in order to benefit for himself just to get a better car for Uber. You're pathetic. Now, here's what Glenn Greenwald points out. Opposing the war in Iraq, you're pro-Saddam. Opposing the war on terror, spying, you're pro-terrorist. Opposing regime change in Syria, pro-Assad. Opposing funding of war in Ukraine, pro-Putin. Opposing U.S. funding Israeli war in Gaza, pro-Hamas. Same tawdry neocon tactics over and over and over. The point is simply that none of these things are pro any of those things. Could be the point I'm making all day. But the reality of the simple concept of opposing funding for something is not pro the other side of it. It's simply that we do not think it's justified or that we don't want our government to spend money anywhere. There's a thousand things it could mean. But just to blindly assume it means the thing that suits your interests is exactly that. A self-serving assumption meant to use, you know, to manipulate the conversation. Now, main last segment before we end with the Naomi Klein point is the mass graves. And I wanted to update on that since we talked about it last time. This clip is pretty rough. And this is, I don't know the guy's name, the reporter who's asking the question, but he follows up. And it's rare, in my opinion, it's quite rare to not be one of the people that we usually point to. And he's speaking up and he's asking the question, the follow-up on the idea of these mass graves. And he just goes to town, calls out the obvious. How are you letting the accused investigate themselves? Like, that's, they should laugh about that. His response shows you that he's not expecting a genuine question. And I've rarely seen, I mean, I don't think Patel's really that good at this, but honestly, he usually at least finds a way back to the kind of seamless talking points. In this, he falls back on something that is obvious. I'll say it afterward. You'll see what I mean. It's really obvious. And all it shows you is the point we're making the entire time. They know this is happening. They don't care. In fact, they're actively covering it up for Israel.
The Gaza Civil Service today held a press conference this morning, which was televised, and they said that evidence showed that many of those pulled out from the three mass graves that they found, including children, were tortured before being killed. Some even showed signs of being buried alive, along with other crimes against humanity that they accuse Israeli forces of. They called for an independent forensic investigation. This administration repeatedly says that it asks Israel, the Israeli government, to investigate itself. As a mediator for peace between Israelis and Palestinians, how does it ever make sense that the United States asked the accused party to examine itself and provide reports that you have previously said that you actually trust? What's wrong with an independent scientific forensic investigation?
Yeah, with that rape conversation, right? Because Israel also didn't allow that. As they're screaming that no one believes them, and nobody allowed an actual UN deeper investigation. They refused it. They had their person do it for the UN, and they shut it down after that because they're lying.
I mean, if the results of such an independent investigation proved the accusations to be baseless, then that would be in Israel's favor, wouldn't it?
Right. So if you're arguing, we know this isn't true, which is what Israel's saying, then wouldn't this be in your interest to make sure that it's clear? Well, the obvious reality is there, that they don't want the investigation because they don't want the, in my opinion, the truth to be seen. Otherwise, you'd be like, sure, bring it on. Of course, the argument we made that they would usually make, which is that they know everyone is racist and everyone hates Jews, so we can't let them do it because they're only going to lie about it, which is the whole Zionist lie about the world, that everyone is against Israel. And, you know, everyone is against Zionism at this point because of what you did. Wasn't even like that a couple of months, well, 8 months ago. It is now because of what you did.
So as it relates to the continued reporting about, we're seeing about these mass graves, first National Security Advisor Sullivan spoke a little bit about this yesterday, but we continue to find these reports incredibly troubling. And that's why...
That's the best you get. That's what you get when it's bad. It's troubling, and we'll look to Israel to explain it for us.
Yesterday, you saw the National Security Advisor call for this to be thoroughly investigated
by Israel.
We want to see these facts looked into, and simultaneously, we're continuing to press the government of Israel for more information. The IDF has spoken to this.
Which they said it wasn't true, and they said that Hamas did it, which is actually what they said. No evidence.
In some sense already, but we are continuing to press them for additional information.
What a great answer. Why do you let them investigate themselves? And your answer is, we let them investigate themselves. Next question. That's literally what it sums up what he just said. We care a law, and we told them we care, and we asked them for more information, and we said they're going, and we asked them. That's it. I mean, it's just a roundabout, nonsensical answer, saying the same things in different ways, and you didn't even answer the question, which is usually how that goes.
But why not have an independent forensic scientist, which the Palestinians are calling for?
We think question. This does need to be thoroughly investigated.
Not what he said. He asked about an independent investigation. It's just pulling teeth.
But in terms of the modality, we continue to want to see some additional information from the government of Israel before.
But you're asking the accused to investigate itself.
We believe that through a thorough investigation, we can get some additional answers. We're also hoping to continue to get more information from the government of Israel.
That's how we ended it. He jumps away real quick, but his answer is that we hope to get more from Israel. So you didn't, you just circled back to this point. You didn't even answer the question even remotely, but you're letting them investigate themselves. But we hope to get more information from them. So you're saying, yes, we agree. We're not going to investigate further. Like, it's just painful. But I'm not sure if anybody else could do any better. You're in a spot where there is no answer, right? Because we all know what you're doing. We all see what you're doing. You're just trying to, I mean, maybe he's the best. Maybe that's the best you're going to get from any of them. A circular logic, nonsensical answer that's basically like, yes, without saying yes. Yes, we're going to let them tell us the truth and rather what they want us to say is the truth. And then yes, we're going to tell you that that's where we're going to end it. And to us, that's our investigation. But never even acknowledging that there will never be an independent investigation, despite the fact that that's the only thing they call for when it's Russia, China, or Venezuela, and anybody else. Because that's what hypocrisy looks like.
Go ahead. Investigation, we can get some additional answers. We're also hoping to continue to get more information from the government of Israel on this.
But you didn't even answer the question. Okay, we'll just move on. It's painful. And I'm going to leave this for you guys can read this. It's the same information. It's a great article from The Cradle. Palestinians buried alive by Israeli army in Nasir Hospital, mass graves. And they go into 392 bodies, children in the mass graves, hands bound, executions, buried alive. These are all coming from reports on the ground from in Khan Yunis, safe location, apparently, right? The multiple aspects, heads and bodies without skin, and some of them had their organs stolen, which we've already talked about. UN Secretary General says it's a clear and transparent and needs a clear and transparent, credible investigation, which Israel is never going to allow, and the U.S. is going to let be the case. You just heard him say it. We're going to ask Israel for instruction. Well, we already talked about this again. This is not a new story. Israel's open secret going back way before October 7th of Palestinian organ theft, been covered by the UN, been covered by corporate media, been covered by human rights groups, but apparently it's fake news when we talk about it again. Here is another clip I thought backed this up, which I found interesting. Before we get into the conversation of the bulldozing of families in their homes, here's another example that brings them two together, brings those two stories together, the bulldozing of graves, which is interesting, right? Because both stories are getting denied like it's fake stories, but we already know that they've done this. Even CNN has made reports about how they're bulldozing dead bodies and burying them in the ground. So how is it possible that we're going to pretend that this isn't actually what's happening? The mass graves or the burying of people alive? It's obvious. Here's what even CNN said.
The Israeli military acknowledged that they rolled into a cemetery, took bodies out of graves as part of what they say is a search for Israeli hostages' remains. But as the Israeli military put out that statement, we were completing our investigation into the Israeli military's desecration of cemeteries. And what we found is 16 cemeteries across Gaza damaged or destroyed. I do want to warn our viewers that they may find some of these images disturbing.
In Gaza, even the dead cannot escape the indignities of war.
That's the whole point of this kind of nonsense. Indignities of war? Indignities of war? Or, you know, war crimes committed by Israel might be a better way to say that. That's my point about the pulling punches where it matters. They're desperate to try to get your faith back, if it ever existed, while still kind of maintaining the narrative for Israel. That's what corporate media does. Just made to point that out.
Dozen cemeteries like this one in Jabalia, desecrated by the Israeli military. Gravestones destroyed, soil upturned, tread marks leaving little left for the living to honor their dead.
That's a war crime. Every day of the week.
This is that same graveyard before the war. 1 month later, a series of tread marks can be seen on the northwestern edge. It is no exception.
Right, so if you're going to tell us you're doing that to find hostages, why didn't you dig up the entire graveyard? Because that's not what it's about. It's about desecration, it's about torture, and it's about organ theft, and it's about much darker things that we've gotten into the past. But overall, you could argue that this is about also burying things in those areas, which is what we're finding in these other locations.
CNN analysis of videos and satellite imagery found that 16 cemeteries have been damaged or destroyed by the Israeli military since it launched its ground offensive. As Israeli forces push deeper into Gaza, they crush the graves of thousands of Palestinians between November and January. Janina Dill, co-director of Oxford University's Institute for Ethics, Law, and Armed Conflict, says destroying graveyards violates international law, except under very limited circumstances.
Which none of them apply here, no matter what they try to say. These aren't tactful, you know, like looking for specific people or specific location. These are just 16 cemeteries. I mean, the reality is quite obvious, and we've already proven this because other doctors have spoken up, like Abu Sita, for example, and said they stole organs, they stole these bodies, they buried bodies in these areas, which we're now finding even more.
Cemeteries are not military objectives. They are, in fact, what international law would consider an object that is normally dedicated to civilian purposes, like places of worship generally. So this is protected from intentional attack. It can only be intentionally attacked or destroyed if it becomes a military objective.
Exactly. And that's what they say about everything. All they have to do is say Hamas present and everyone looks away who is blindly adherent to the Zionist narrative. That's what's happening. Now, I'm actually going to leave that there as well, just because you got the point in general. And of course, there's ultimately a time issue for me at the moment. But here is another clip that we've talked about. Remember this one? Same point. How is there not a date on this, which is ridiculous? Now, I forget the exact date. We talked about this. This couldn't have been more than a month old. I forget the exact date. How is there not a date on this? Now, the point is, this was the example, and it actually shows the picture on the front. Remember this? The bulldozers that were bulldozing on the beach when this guy was walking and they shot him waving a flag. One of them, they shot him too. Then later you see them both being buried in the sand by a bulldozer. Remember, very public story. Israel admits killing two Palestinians. Well, I guess where's the war crime tribunal? They weren't Hamas members. They were average people walking on the beach. They shot them and buried them. And then when they called them up, they go, yeah, we did that. We buried them with a bulldozer. To the outcry of nobody in the international community. I mean, not plenty of them. I mean, like in the ones we hear in the corporate media. Where's the conversation here? Just because we can see they've killed 50,000 people doesn't mean that two are any less of a crime. But here we are now where they're denying a new discussion, right? Oh, actually, here, hold on. This was the... Oh, that got out of place. That's what happened. Hold on. Yeah, we played that. Okay. So here, coming from this discussion, knowing that this is the reality, knowing they've already done this, the question needs to be, do you think that the other hospital graveyard that we've just discussed, the newer ones in Al-Shifa, Nasir, these new ones, are those the same conversation? I mean, look, just based on logic, any detective or researcher would go, well, there's where you're going to look first. There's the most likely discussion since we know they've already done it, right? Here is what one of the Israeli politicians has to say. And by the way, she's one that has already been called out for lying about churches, which I guess I'll just play that first, which is embarrassing. She already got caught lying in a really public way right in the beginning of this.
There are no churches in Gaza, so I'm not quite sure where the report is talking about.
There's a Catholic church in there, isn't there? That is.
Yeah, unfortunately, there are no Christians.
Oh, okay, so there's a church. Okay, oops. So you just lied real quickly and just brushed over that. So there are churches, but there are no Christians. Oh, but there are.
They were driven out by...
Well, respectfully, there are Christians, because I spoke to an MP yesterday who has family members in the church who are Christians.
Well, I don't know what happened. I don't know who was attacked. Church.
Wow. Oh, let's just skip out. I didn't even know. Back to the point. We were going to ignore that I lied twice in a row and got embarrassed very clearly. The point is, they got driven out by the Israeli government. This is a point that everyone pretends they don't know about, right? They argue that they removed them for safety, but that's the same. They removed them. It wasn't Gaza that pushed them out, because before this, they did live in peace before the Israeli state. Same thing in Syria. The point was that was one of the third or fourth largest Christian population in all the Middle East, until the Israeli government, the U.S. government destroyed it all, largely aiming at the Christian population. The point is clear. But they're lying to you to create these narratives. And historically, they never get pushback. The lie is, no, there's not Christians, because they hate everybody except, you know, it's all the Muslims hating Christians and Jews. It's not the truth. And she got caught. And that there are Christians still, and that there are churches, and they've been bombing those churches. Well, here she is today, spreading another provable lie and getting a little pushback too, in a very embarrassing way.
283 corpses found in a mass grave at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. The UN Human Rights Chief has said he is absolutely horrified. Who do you think those bodies are?
Probably terrorists, because the ratio of combatant to innocent that Israel has is unprecedented in modern warfare.
What a disgusting statement they keep making. There's no evidence of that. The truth in that, like they're trying to manipulate the overall reality and try to turn this into some kind of mathematical thing to compare in every possible metric you can look at, every per capita, the size of this, the time frame, the amount of people, the amount of children. And just looking at the information, 15, 16,000 children, I think it's 17,000 now, the amount of schools and hospitals and mosques and journalists and medics that have been killed. It's so shocking that they can even keep saying that. And that they don't even get pushback from the people that are pushing back in other ways, like her. It's unreal. But the bottom line is, it's still being towed by the biggest leaders or, you know, positions of power in the world.
We know we've killed about 15,000 terrorists. There was a
So the same amount of numbers of children, they're just saying terrorists. That's interesting. Even though we know that's not true. Nobody's proven that. Not even Israel. There's no evidence they've killed. I mean, I haven't seen a single piece of evidence seeing a single Hamas member. Like a provable example of a Hamas member being killed. Haven't seen it. Doesn't mean it hasn't happened. I find it almost impossible they haven't accidentally killed some while aiming for their own hostages, most likely, in my opinion. Hannibal directive on full display. Nonetheless, everything you're hearing from her is assumption. Well, probably terrorists. Okay, well, in what world do we just lean into what you want to think and act like that's more the truth than anything else, despite all of the history? Everything she does is like that.
Terrible battle in those areas. So the chances are...
How do you think these people died?
In gun battles with Israel.
Why do you...
I think that's an important accidental statement, because the narrative was supposed to be, as Israel and the IDF said, that was Hamas, that Hamas buried them. Well, hold on. If you just said they got killed in gunfires with Israel, well, there's another narrative shift for you. But this happens every time. They realize it's not sticking, so they just shift the narrative and nobody calls that out.
You think some of the bodies were found with ties around their hands?
Well, because we probably arrested the terrorists.
And then killed them.
Well, I don't know if the terrorists fought back. I wasn't there.
Okay, so we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Here's an example of people bound and shot dead and buried. I thought this was a democracy. Where's the due process, right? The bottom line is, even without some lie of due process, this international law, you're not allowed to just murder these people without some kind of process. And the bottom line, well, we don't know what happened. Let's just assume that whatever needed to happen to make that okay actually happened. Okay, move on. That's disgusting. So she doesn't know, but she's willing to lie and cover it up. That's the whole thing. Same with all the people in positions of power right now.
But all I can tell you is that this has been a very difficult urban warfare, that nobody on earth has experienced this type of warfare, where the terrorists are hiding in tunnels, where they're cowards because they won't face their enemy. They just leave innocent people up there whilst they hide.
None of that's even true. That's actually been repeatedly proven to be false based on the numbers, based on the engagements. It's pretty clear that Israel's lost this war, even according to Haaretz. And the reality is Hamas has been pretty much destroying them, just like it has in the past, just like Lebanon has in the past, or Hezbollah. And it's very clear. We're going to see this the more this goes forward, unless this spins out into something much worse, which I'm hoping doesn't happen. But that's just petty. It's not true.
In tunnels that are bigger than the London Underground.
Which I find hard to believe. But frankly, we also know that Israel built a lot of this, which we've been admitted to also by Barak.
And they come out, they shoot, and it could be that many of them were shot and they were shooting in a battle. And it could be that there were bombs thrown by them and grenades. There could be a million
different... Yeah, it could be aliens, right? It could be that they're ghosts and we couldn't even find them. It could be anything, right? Let's just make up stories that makes it work for us. Let's ignore genocide because I think we have a narrative that could be true.
Different scenarios of why these were found. But remember, we're in the middle of all.
I just to clarify for me, if you would, how do they fight back with their hands tied behind their backs?
Yep.
Well, we don't know what they were doing before their hands were tied behind their backs, do we?
No, but if you've managed to cable tie them, they shouldn't, find them dead, should we?
And maybe, again, we're just conjecturing. Maybe his friends threw a grenade, and then what happens?
Wow.
Maybe there was a missile. Maybe they threw a rocket. And then what happens? Again, this is conjecture. I wasn't there. You weren't there. We can't know. All I know is...
Yeah, some were. Plenty of people were there. Where are they? Well, we're not getting to talk to them, are we? We're getting a statement coming from IDF administration and people like you, which go, well, I don't even know what happened. Let's pretend we know and give you narrative. Why are you even on this show right now if you don't know what happened? If your whole purpose was to come here and tell us what happened, and you're just going, well, we don't even know. Let's pretend. Guys, this is really bad. I don't know how in the world this is still happening. With all of this kind of, this is day after day. You even have people like them in the corporate media that are absolutely, at least in certain points like this, asking the right questions.
That our army has the
neither
highest...
Neither was Amnesty International, and they say this.
She goes on to basically Amnesty International. That there's a million examples of Amnesty and Human Rights Watch saying, that challenging the Israeli narrative. All they do is say, oh, they're racist. They hate Jews. Unreal. Now, Jack Merkinson points out today in The Nation, we have a piece by Lujan, a 14-year-old girl in Gaza that has floored me every time he's read it, he says, I've read it, he says. It's about what happened when an Israeli bulldozer came to destroy the house she was staying in, and you must read it. Now, unfortunately, I'm going to leave it for you to read. I only highlighted some focal points. The bottom line I can tell you is very simple, okay? The title is The Bulldozer Kept Coming. A girl stares down death in Gaza. The obvious reality here is that they were in their home. They were terrified. Then she starts to see green lasers through the window and bullets flying everywhere. These are civilians in their home. And they look out. Her mother goes to look, and they see children and a family running from the next door neighbor. The house that they can see being bulldozed down. There's people in there, guys, as it's being bulldozed. And they're bleeding and they're cut and they're running from these people. And they run to the next house and they come inside. And she starts to help them and treat them. What do you know? Next, they come to their house. Okay, this is not because of Hamas, not because of tunnels. They are systematically destroying these homes because they're building settlements. They are already planning something here. And on top of it, they're just bulldozing homes with families in them. And she's telling the story as written by The Nation. And and by the way, we have countless examples proving this going back long before October 7th. And the reality is that they surrounded the house. And we have examples of this happening before where they surround these areas, then tell them to flee, and then shoot them when they come out. In this case, thank God, they got away. But they send them to a school where they tell them they have to stay. And then they move them from that. They move them from location to location, and they're standing outside. They're scared. They don't know what's going on. And they come. They end up where they're holding them at gunpoint for some reason, having them sit down on the ground. The mother has to stand between them and the shooter and saying, don't kill my family. Like, this is what they're doing with civilians? And one of the interesting stories is how after all this horrible stuff and after they're doing this with them, they come up and go, here, have some water. And the mother goes, don't take the water. And he asks why. And she goes, because all they're doing is filming us, trying to pretend like they're doing good things. And she looks and sure enough, they're being filmed. And then after that, they go back to doing the same things they're doing. It's exactly what we know. Now, of course, you could argue this is being made up and so on, but we have plenty of evidence other than this. The sad reality is, guys, this is exactly what the IDF whistleblower is telling you. They're doing this. They're destroying things because they're killing people for no reason. Hatred. It's just the worst situation I've ever had to cover in my life, and we can watch it in plain view 24 hours a day, and they're bragging about it on Instagram and TikTok. So too are the politicians. As they're doing this to people's homes. Imagine if this was your home, your daughter. And by the way, in one of these families, their father was killed going to Rafah to try to get things for their family. Here's what Dan Cohen says. Some Zionists think they're killing Palestinians to wipe out the seed of Amalek. Others think they're doing it to create a safe space for Jews or to protect some LGBTQ haven in the Middle East. In reality, they're all tools in Netanyahu's game to keep the Gaza slaughter going as long as possible to stay out of jail. They protect their incoherent and contradictory ideologies into the shape, project their incoherent and contradictory ideologies into the shape-shifting idol of genocidal Zionism. Now, I agree with that entirely, but I also think that it's not just about Netanyahu. And I think he agrees. I think he thinks the same. But this is the clear moment right now that Netanyahu is clearly the central role. But even if he were removed, quite frankly, I think the far right behind him is way more alarming than Netanyahu, which is crazy to say because Netanyahu is a maniac. But it's not even consistent, guys. They're all the only thing consistent is the desire to kill Palestinians. Now, here is Ben-Gvir in a quick video showing you that those people, the Religious Zionism Party, the most extreme aspects, right now, this thing is spinning out of their control in Israel. And it's not because they don't want people in Gaza to be hurt. There's, frankly, I think like this seems like the majority. Ultimately, they just don't agree with a lot of what they're doing. And I think it stems back to the idea that they're killing their own people. Here's him getting attacked in Israel. All over the place who are screaming about this. 972 Magazine talked about it. They know. They know that they haven't taken these agreements. They know that they've lied about it. They know that they're killing their own family members by continuing to bomb in these locations. And they're screaming about it. Your government's not saying a word. Their government's not saying a word. They're actually astroturfing you. They're screaming about the lies and pretending like everyone agrees when we know they don't. Now, to finish, a very important point. Now, make sure you watch this at the end, by the way. Now, there's religious tones to this, but I really think regardless of whether you are a Christian or a Muslim or atheist, the points are still the same in the reality of how this is being used and how it's obvious that we have a very clear problem. As Arnaud Bertrand writes, a very important article from Naomi Klein. This is the title. This is from The Guardian. We need an exodus from Zionism. Think about that. A main Guardian article highlighting something that 30 seconds ago would have been the cast out of modern society for anti-Semitism, even though it's not even talking about anything Semitic related. It's about a political organization that has hijacked a religion and is manipulating the world. That's the truth. He says a very important article. One of the main Jewish thinkers of our age. Now, I don't know if I agree with that, but I think that she does have a lot of good information to share. I just mean in the sense of thinkers of our age, whether Jewish or not, which argues that Zionism is a perversion of Judaism, which, by the way, I completely agree with, and I've been saying the same. Or rather, specifically, that Zionism is perverted, is manipulating Judaism. But it says, to the pursuit of a false idol, as she puts it. It is so important because the single most damaging direction that we can take as a result of Gaza, post-October 7th at the very least, is to buy into Israel's current narrative that Judaism is Zionism. 100%. And that opposing it is therefore anti-Semitic. This is absolutely key because from it stems absolutely everything else. That's exactly what I'm talking about. It would be immensely damaging because it takes an extreme, radicalizing, and murderous ideology, quote, that commits genocide in our name, quote from the article, and says, quote, this is Judaism, the first monotheistic religion from which the other two derive. There is no overstating how destructive this is to the very foundation of our culture, to the very core of our identity. Literally coercive to who we are on, corrosive to who we are on a biblical scale. He also goes on to say it is also immensely damaging because, of course, everything Zionism stands for runs so counter to fundamental human values that we all share. The sanctity of human life, the belief that theft is wrong, the belief that all humans, no matter what religion or ethnic origins, are equal, etc. And I think we're all becoming clear that most people in power don't care about those things. But as a population, we're also becoming shockingly clear that we all do, largely. And that's why they pretend to be good, because they know we do. A point Caitlin Johnstone's made many times over the years. And I think that's what's really, this is the point I'm trying to, you know, it's hard to kind of highlight this, but we're watching this materialize and we need to take advantage of this. This is a revolution. Now, it doesn't always end with positive change, guys, but sure as hell we should try. And I'm in no way am I calling for violence. He goes on to say, as Klein points out, quote, it is a false idol that has led far too many of our own people down a deeply immoral path that now has them justifying the shredding of core commandments. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not covet. Coming back on this and saying that fighting for those fundamental values is anti-Semitic, a repulsive moral crime, is nihilistic to the extreme. It is a negation of our very humanity. All this would ultimately not only result in Judaism destroying itself by becoming co-opted by this militaristic ethno-state political project, but it risks destroying all the countries that support it alongside with it. The moral contradictions necessary to support this are just too overwhelming. It's like acid on the soul of those countries. And my God, how do people not see it? That's what I keep highlighting. These contradictions are overwhelmingly obvious. He goes on to say, and that's why Jewish voices like Klein are so important. And that I agree. Because as Mersheimer and Walt argued in their famous book in the Israel lobby, accusations of anti-Semitism are the great silencer. That's a quote. A scarily powerful tool to silence criticism of Israel's actions. And Jewish voices have, of course, the immense advantage of being able to say, I'm Jewish. Kryptonite to the great silencer. At least it was. Which is why the fact so many of these students protesting today in U.S. campuses are Jewish is totally silenced by so many of the media, as admitting it would reduce the potency of the great silencer. But see, my point is that is all. Ben Shapiro immediately attacking all the Jews that were calling for peace. They've tried to go the other direction with that, showing you that it's not about Judaism. It's about Zionism. He continues, it's not only important because they have this great silencer kryptonite, but also because their activism is in and of itself the best weapon against actual anti-Semitism, the real one this time, which does exist, which, by the way, applies to not just Jewish people, right? Palestinians are Semites. It says, if the current Israeli project of equating Zionism with Judaism did succeed and were to be commonly accepted, then naturally all Jewish people would be equated with Zionism, which is what they're trying to do. He goes, and its actions, which anyone with an ounce of common sense can understand would make actual anti-Semitism surge, which plenty of intelligent people have argued that's the actual goal of what they're doing here. That they might have allowed this in general to make that happen because they saw the diminishing of their control over the Jewish population. It's wild. But we can see it. I mean, really, if that ended up happening, how would the reality would be that people would associate the crimes of these genocides with all of Judaism? And how would that not create people wanting seeing that as they're responsible, causing hatred? It's just this disgusting dynamic that the people, just like I keep saying everywhere, standing up and professing to be the good guy, doing all of the bad, exactly the same dynamic. We're here to protect you while you're manufacturing the reasons that they need to feel protected. It says, the more Jewish people like Klein say not in our name, the more Zionism is seen as it should rightly be seen, a false idol that Jews need to exodus from in order to ultimately resolve the biggest injustice of our age that inflicted on the Palestinians. Well said. So we're going to end with this clip. Now, essentially what she's doing is reading what she wrote in The Guardian. And I think she added some points as well. So it's about a 10-minute clip. I recommend that you listen to it. Now, overall, that was the gist of it right there in the article in general. But I recommend you listen to her words because they're very powerful. I'm going to end with that clip. So thank you for tuning in today, guys. It's just, every time it's we can see so much darkness. There's always so much darkness in the world because it's a yin and yang reality, guys. It's never, I think this is just the way the world is. There's always going to be bad. There's always going to be good. And it's always going to be an endless battle between the two. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't fight. And I think the reality is that we can influence people to see the good in others. And I think we're doing that with every single thing that we do because we believe it. We live it. We act in it. We exude all of these things and people pick up on that. And I've said this many times. And I believe that this is why this is happening, because of efforts like us going back decades, fighting for the truth at the expense of of everything, or it could be anyway. And right now, that's this line we're walking. I mean, how long until the very accusation of what Facebook said at the beginning, right? That you're promoting dangerous identity groups and promoting terrorism. How long until that becomes a crime? How long until they beat down my door and say, wait a minute, you're a terrorist because you said these things? Even though we know that's not true. What happens when an authoritarian government decides to just make that claim and there's no one to do, nothing to do about it? I mean, in fact, my recent song is about that. I think the reality clearly is that we are on this precipice. We're on, or rather better, on this knife's edge. And it really comes down to what we decide to do individually, but also as a collective, but that's much harder to manage. So everything we're doing is driving people to fight individually for better things in their world. And I'm telling you guys, if you just pay attention to what's happening right now, most of the world agrees with you. And we just need to see that. Cross these arbitrary lines of nations and ethnicity. And in no way, by the way, am I advocating for no nations and kind of some kind of global government. No, I'm just saying we need to see beyond these imaginary lines. I believe in the idea of allowing people to aggregate where they want to and have their countries and their own beliefs. My point is that we just need to acknowledge that just because they live in another country doesn't mean they're somehow the other. They just have different thoughts and different beliefs. But we're all fighting for what we believe. We're all fighting for families and life and security and freedom. And we want that, guys. They know that and they don't. And it's very clear, rather, that they want that at our expense, whereas we want that for everybody. It's just so paramount right now. And I believe to the depths of my soul that we can make this happen. I believe that we can make this slow change if we truly believe that we are able to, and that with our very actions, we can influence the outcome. Not through voting, not through some other political manipulation, but through just being who we believe we can be. I mean, some people will think that seems naive or small, but I think it's everything. So let's truly try to make that change happen and fight for people that are standing up for what is right. I love you all. Thank you for being here. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Naomi Klein gave a speech last night at the Emergency Seder in New York that you have to hear this.
My friends, I've been thinking about Moses and his rage when he came down from the mount to find the Israelites worshiping a golden calf. The eco-feminist in me has always been uneasy about this story. What kind of God is jealous of animals? What kind of God wants to hoard all the sacredness of the earth for himself? But there is, of course, a less literal way of understanding this story. It is a lesson about false idols, about the human tendency to worship the profane and shiny, to look to the small and material rather than the large and transcendent. What I want to say to you this evening at this revolutionary and historic Seder in the streets is that too many of our people are worshiping a false idol once again. They are enraptured by it. They are drunk on it. They are profaned by it. And that false idol is called Zionism. It is a false idol that takes our most profound biblical stories of justice and emancipation from slavery, the story of Passover itself, and turns them into brutalist weapons of colonial land theft, roadmaps for ethnic cleansing and genocide. It is a false idol that has taken the transcendent idea of the promised land, a metaphor for human liberation that has traveled across faiths to every corner of this globe, and dared to turn it into a deed of sale for a militarist ethnostate. Political Zionism's version is itself profane. From the start, it required the mass expulsion of Palestinians from their homes and ancestral lands in the Nakba. From the start, it has been at war with collective dreams of liberation. At a Seder, it is worth remembering that this includes the dreams of liberation and self-determination of the Egyptian people. This false idol of Zionism has long equated Israeli safety with Egyptian dictatorship and unfreedom and client state. From the start, it has produced an ugly kind of freedom that saw Palestinian children not as human beings, but as demographic threats. Much as the Pharaoh in the book of Exodus feared the growing population of Israelites and thus ordered the death of their sons. And as we know, Moses was saved from that by being put in a basket and adopted by an Egyptian woman. Zionism has brought us to our present moment of cataclysm, and it is time that we say clearly, it has always been leading us here. Yes. It is a false idol that has led far too many of our own people down a deeply immoral path that now has shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet, the commandments brought down from the mount. It is a false idol that equates Jewish freedom with cluster bombs that kill and maim Palestinian children. Zionism is a false idol that has betrayed every Jewish value, including the value that we place on questioning a practice embedded in the Seder itself with its four questions asked by the youngest child. It also betrays the love that we have as a people for text and for education. Today, this false idol dares to justify the bombing of every single university in Gaza, the destruction of countless schools, of archives, of printing presses, the killing of hundreds of academics, scholars, journalists, poets, essayists. This is what Palestinians call scholasticide, the killing of the infrastructure and the means of education. In this city, the universities call the NYPD and barricade themselves against the grave threat posed by their own students, asking them, students embodying the spirit of the Seder, asking the most basic question, asking questions like, how can you claim to believe in anything at all, least of all us, while you enable, invest in, and collaborate with this genocide? The false idol of Zionism has been allowed to grow unchecked for far too long. So tonight we say, it ends here. Our Judaism cannot be contained by an ethnostate, for our Judaism is internationalist by its very nature. Our Judaism cannot be protected by the rampaging military of that ethnostate, for all that military does is sow sorrow and reap hatred, including hatred against us as Jews. Our Judaism is not threatened by people raising their voices in solidarity with Palestine across lines of race, ethnicity, physical ability, gender identity, and generations. Our Judaism is one of those voices and knows that in this chorus lies both our safety and our collective liberation. Yes. Our Judaism is the Passover, is the Judaism of the Passover Seder, the gathering in ceremony to share food and wine with loved ones and strangers alike. This ritual, light enough to carry on our backs, in need of nothing but one another, we don't need walls, we need no temple, no rabbi, and there is a role for everyone, including, especially, the smallest child. The Seder is portable. A diaspora technology, if ever there was one. It is made to hold our collective grieving, our contemplation, our questioning, our remembering, and our reviving and rekindling of the revolutionary spirit. So tonight, so look around. This here is our Judaism. As waters rise and forests burn and nothing is certain, we pray at the altar of solidarity and mutual aid, no matter the cost. We don't need or want the false idol of Zionism. We want freedom from the project that commits genocide in our name. From the ideology that has no plan for peace except for deals with murderous theocratic petrostates next door while selling the technologies of robo-assassinations to the world. We seek to liberate Judaism from an ethnostate that wants wants Jews to be perennially afraid, that wants our children afraid, that wants us to believe that the world is against us so that we go running to its fortress, or at least keep sending the weapons and the donations. That is a false idol. And it's not just Netanyahu. It's the world he made and the world that made him. It's Zionism.
That's right.
What are we? We, in these streets for months and months, we are the Exodus. The Exodus from Zionism. Yes. So, to the Chuck Schumers of this world, we do not say, let our people go. We say, we have already gone, and your kids, they're with us now.
You can find the full speech. It was published in The Guardian. But Naomi, I don't know if you'll ever see this, but I have already printed this out. It is going in my own Haggadah, and I will read it every year. I cannot thank you enough for this piece of writing.